Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
We had a podcast that all in all included 9 people. It's the biggest podcast that I've ever been part of, and it actually went very well. It had all been organized by Nordlux. There was a bit of misunderstanding here and there. I wasn't aware of what the real topic was for the day. But we had really great guys on, and they were from many different countries, and I really liked this podcast. This was very informative, and you could see they were serious and they knew their stuff. It was also nice to get someone from the UK there who could talk as well. So it was a real multi-continental chat, me in Africa, Nordlux in Europe, the guy in the UK, and the other guys in America. So when I started recording, the guys were just busy chatting, and they were chatting about people in the UK that the whites in the UK hate the most. And they were having some fun, and actually it was quite a good little discussion. So I've left that in at the beginning, and then later I get into the thing and I start talking. And we ended up having quite a long discussion that was really interesting, and the guys were really serious, and they could really start talking about some very interesting things. So this was an excellent podcast organized by Nordlux, and we'll be working on something like this again. I liked this a lot. I was very impressed. We've got a lot of quality in the white right, and people mustn't be despondent. Don't be despondent. And if you listen to far enough into this discussion, you'll hear us talking about some serious things. And I try to explain to the guys things that can be done. Someone comes and asks me, what can we do to avoid the problems of South Africa? And I told them that the whites of South Africa are not finished yet. I know everyone has written us off, but we're not finished yet. The last battle for South Africa has not been fought yet. And the Boers are still here, and the Boers are still working away, and many are surviving and hanging in there. And I live here. I observe everything that I can, and I speak to people, and I'm telling you, we're not finished. We're not finished, and the good stuff is still coming. But I try to explain also what are the things that plague us, and what are the real issues at work. Because our situation, despite everyone being demoralized, our situation is nothing as bad as people think it is. I discuss Jews, and I discuss what the Jews do that give them an edge over us. And we're going to look at this issue of Jews and whites, and how can we beat these scum-sucking Jew rat pieces of shit. So hang in there. We're in a war, and it simply is a case of keep your head down and keep on going forward. Don't listen to the enemy. Anyway, here is the discussion, and it starts off with them chatting away, and then we get into the stuff, and we cover all kinds of topics, and it was a very interesting chat.
So I could say that, but mainly the Brits don't want immigration, and really against immigration, but they don't want to be racist, not understanding that they can't have one or the other, because the people who are non-white that are already here will want immigration because they'll want more people that look like them. And the Brits find this really hard to understand, and I can get really annoyed, as you know, and lose my temper and call them.
But they don't have problems with the Pakis and Indians and all the stuff.
Well, the most... Sorry, I jumped the gun a bit. The most hated people in the UK are, number one, the Muslim Pakistanis, and number two, the travellers. number three are your favourite people in Bulgaria and Romania, the Gypo.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we have Gypos here, like the dark-skinned Gypos, not travellers. But travellers work like Gypos. They cause a lot of trouble. They have families and clans that hustle and do crime and con people, scam people.
Wait a second. How do you make a difference between your Pakis and the Gypsies? I mean, they are plus minus looking the same.
Nah. There's a big difference. Nah. Like the Pakis have literal poo skin, and the Gypsies kind of look like some type of like mutt child between an Iranian and like a Punjabi Indian.
Pakistanis.
I have objections. I literally saw Gypsy with dark purple skin.
I think that's
no, I'm not joking. Mascot.
That's the color of their pussy, dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
How do you know?
How would I know?
One way you can tell the difference, though, is the set of their eyes. Pakistanis, I've never seen humans with such close-set eyes.
Human.
Yeah, well, okay, sorry. Hominids.
Implied, no.
Hominids. Yeah. That's one way you can tell. The Gypsies kind of have wider faces than them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, the Gypsies seem to be a bit lighter. Maybe it's because when they came to Europe, they mixed with Europeans. Like, maybe they hoard the women out.
Lots of love.
They came from the Middle East, too. They came from India, but they passed through Middle East and then through Byzantium Empire. So, Eastern Rome, yeah. Basically, the word that is used for gypsies for the English-speaking world come from Egypt, Aegyptus, right? Meanwhile, for the Eastern and Central Europe is, in German, is Zigeuner, in Bulgarian, Ciganin, in Serbian, Croatian, whatever, and Ukrainian, I believe is the same, Ciganin. So basically, it's come from Greek Asiganis, and it's something like some kind of Semitic sect that were child kidnappers and child sacrifice in the Middle Ages, something like that. And they associated the gypsies with this sect. So that's something strange is going on. And this sect, there were quite a lot of Jewish connections with these people. So, yeah, gypsies. So, anyway, maybe we must start. Jan, maybe we must introduce ourselves and start the conversation or something.
I'm not sure how you guys want to work. You're welcome to do that. If you want to start introducing yourselves, then yeah, let's do that.
Well, you're the host, I suppose.
Am I in charge today? Okay.
Yes, yes.
All right. Okay. All right, guys. Well, then, we can take turns and... The things I want to focus on, I want to get anything that's current. We've been talking, Georgi and I have been talking a lot about the Ukrainian war and all that, but it was very interesting listening to you guys talking about Britain and all that. Haven't spoken to people from Britain in a while, so very keen to hear what you guys have to say. So from my side, the most interesting thing that I'm watching is the Ukrainian counteroffensive and the war in Ukraine, because this thing is going to determine the fate of Europe and Russia and probably the world for the rest of our lives. And this particular summer is the real summer that is critical, because this summer will show us. Can the Ukrainians actually damage the Russian army? Can they actually move forward? And if so, how fast can they do it? And at the moment, things are not looking that hot, but I've been following it very closely. And as far as I can see, the Ukrainians are functioning carefully. The Ukrainians are trying to do things without losing too many men. and they're very, I have great respect for their capabilities in battle, and I think that they are just wearing down the Russians, waiting for a big break so that they can punch through and smash them. And I'm convinced that they're going to go for Crimea, that that's their real goal, and they'll do everything they can to get there, but we need to see how it goes. And yesterday's crazy stuff with Prigozhin was awesome. That was just freaking awesome. Even though it didn't go as far as we wanted it to go, Prigozhin at least showed, he opened up so many problems for Putin. It was just fantastic. So, Georgi, would you like to tell us some stuff from your side?
Well, my proposal is, the, as I said, I'll be the last. The America, England will be before me. Yeah.
So who's next, Patrick?
Oh, me. Hello, I'm from the UK and I live in England. And I actually, funny enough, come from Irish ancestry, but I feel more English, to be honest. But what I've noticed about the UK is not many people really support Russia. You might get like one or two like Duganist, nationalist types, but not many at all. Like, most people,
you and Colette don't get along.
yeah, sure. Like Colette, but Colette is really, really in the minority. Where
good.
You still get nationalists. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I was saying, fuck that faggot. That's all I had to say.
Yeah, I don't like him. He's a.
He also looks like a Turkish waiter.
I thought he looked very Ashkenazi.
Yeah, his like nose is about to like expand like an alien and swallow coins up. Like,
believe me, Turkish waiters look on average darker than him.
He needs to get in the sun, bro.
Can't believe
he loves Islam too. Quite a bit.
He's spending too much time indoors. That's the problem.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, man. Yeah.
It's all right. Once Colette got interviewed by a Jew, and he said to this Jewish guy that he didn't realize was a Jew, he said, "You look like my uncle, something." And then at the end, he said that I was. But anyway, I'm not going to go on about that. That's, you can watch that on YouTube. Not many people really support Russia. They see Russia as a threat. They see, Putin, he's the next Hitler, or he's the next Stalin, and he's got this evil empire, and he wants to have us all living under the Iron Fist and give us all radioactive tea. But because a few years ago, some Russian guy had some tea and he had uranium in, and it's been in Salisbury, I believe it was. There was a gas attack, something to do with Russia. And, Putin's not popular, but people support Ukraine for the wrong reasons. They're like, oh, well, they're about democracy and liberal values. But you still get nationalists like Vinnie Sullivan and Sangmu. They are pretty much on they pretty much like Azov, I believe, and all them crowd. But, most people support Ukraine for the wrong reasons. I personally support Ukraine because I believe that the land was stolen by them, by Russia, and Donbass and all them areas belongs to them. But it also reminds me of troubles we've had in Britain, in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really want to get into that because that was a shit show. That was red Jew versus blue Jew. Rubbish.
It's really similar to Ulster situation in Donbass, kinda. Not exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But economically, the government say that it's affected us, but personally, I believe it's to do with the lockdowns, and that's why we are economically affected, and why prices of things have gone up, food, fuel, housing bills for gas, electric, water. But a lot of it's blamed on the war in Ukraine. You know, we need to give money to Ukraine. And personally, I don't believe it is. I believe it's to do with the lockdowns.
Patrick, if I may ask you a question, I must tell you, I was quite surprised, very surprised, at how determined Britain is to go after Russia. Britain is given the second most amount of weapons to Ukraine of any of the other countries, and I've been amazed at the determination from the, let's call it, upper classes of Britain, including watching generals and things, and that they just want to see Russia destroyed. I've actually been very astounded by that. You know, the whole world supporting Ukraine seems to have been driven from America, but also Britain, to the point where they're getting Germans and everybody to give as many weapons as they possibly can. So I found that quite interesting. But I just have one comment about wars. I actually put out a video just the other day about wars. Wars are never about right and wrong. Wars are always about power. There's something else at work. And Prigozhin himself, can you believe this Jew, actually brought out some truths recently. And Prigozhin said that the real reason for the war was so that the Russian elite could loot Ukraine. And a thing that I came across was months ago, last year already, I discovered that in Ukraine, along the east and the north, that they discovered huge amounts of gas and oil all across Ukraine, all across from Donbass and so forth. And, you know, I then began to form the opinion that, you know, I think Putin is really after that stuff. Plus Ukraine had, didn't Kiev have a lot of industry and lots of other stuff in the time of the Soviet Union and all that sort of thing? So to me,
yeah, the Nazi biolabs, right?
not the Nazi biolabs, actual real industry.
Yeah.
No, yeah. What military? If I could amplify his point just quickly.
Yeah. Of course.
To introduce ourselves briefly. Sorry.
Sorry to cut you off, but there's something I also forgot to mention. Also, a lot of tanky, like left wing, like traditional, like Marxist, like George Galloway. And, like, not these blue-haired Marxists, but these, like, working class, you know what I mean? A lot of them also support Russia in this country, like some, like, Labour elements who are, like, basically... they're basically, like, there's a guy who's, like, a tank, who's, like, a left-wing tanky, like, you've got the right one, which is Colette, and you've got the left one, which is George Galloway, and he is on RT shilling for Russia constantly, shilling for Palestine, Britain's racist, Britain's evil, America's the great Satan. And the reason that the British are so determined on defeating Russia is because the Judeo-Masons at the top of Britain do not want to lose homogeny for the Judeo-Bolsheviks in Moscow and the Chinese and Iranians.
I've actually always noticed that Britain seems to be hunting for economic reasons. I've wondered whether Britain has gone... is doing this also for economic benefits. Because another topic that comes up is the breakup of Russia. I've heard that. I've picked that up from CIA people, etc. Like, they are hoping that this can lead to the breakup of Russia. And when I listen to the American military guys talking, their goal, they really want to bust Russia down. You know, I think they're tired of the Cold War and all that. So my question is aren't there lots of economic benefits either from Ukraine itself or from destroying Russia?
May I interject with a particular point?
I'd like to jump in momentarily. Go ahead first, though.
The only other thing I'd mention, yeah, this is always about power. It's never about morality, absolutely, especially with people at this level. But another thing is all those children who were abducted from the Ukraine to be raised in Russia. Russia has a gigantic demographic problem. So one of the issues I think they invaded Ukraine was to try to even that out, even though Ukraine itself has a major demographic problem as well. I think the average fertility rate per woman in Russia is around 1.4.
Yep.
And that's average throughout the whole country. It's much lower in places like Moscow.
To amplify the point on, well, to actually rebuttal the point to the collapse of the Russia, my estimation is that it's actually the opposite of what the State Department and the U.S. government would want. They want a manageable, crippled Russia. Mm-hmm. They don't want a fragmented, balkanized Russia due to the situations in Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, the war that would explode between Armenia and Azerbaijan, threatening the oil fields there, and Iran getting involved. And this is just the two off the top of my head. Like, Russia has a lot of pots they have to, you know, simmer on the back burner there with Ukraine obviously taking up all their attention. But if Russia fragments and breaks, that creates a whole, 14 time zones they got to fucking manage?
The U.S. and you also deal with China, too.
Yeah, exactly. That was segueing into my other point there is that U.S. is figuring out how to bottle up China. They don't have a contingency to deal with a collapsed Russia. There's like, even in their policy papers I read, the estimations from like RAND Corporation and these other places though, is that they have the capacity, the U.S. government military only has enough capacity for one, what they call it, theater contingency, plus some resources for another thing. It's like 1.5 contingencies, basically. Those contingencies being active hot wars. So that 0.5 residual that they could dump into something is basically going into Ukraine right now. And a lot of that's presidential drawdown from their old stockpiles. It's not like Lend-Lease. I mean, they're kind of kicking up the Lend-Lease now because they went through their stock and they want to give, you know, some defense contract, some money. So that is going to be pumped into with, you know, S-16s, Bradleys, and the M1A1s that are being refurbished. But as far as that goes, I would say it's they want to manage the crisis. They don't want to collapse Russia because at this point it's not really the U.S. Soviet Union anymore.
Huh. I mean, is Russia like a paper tiger?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's made itself apparent. But its resources aren't.
With nuclear weapons and a lot of resources, yeah.
Yeah, it's Nigeria with snow, some people say. It's an extraction economy with the same sort of politics that happen in extraction economies. You have people that maintain the monopolies on those resources and give out licenses for that sort of thing. Just go ahead.
It seems to me that Russia is a paper tiger, and they do what the Israelis do with the Samson option. Like, they say, you know, if you don't let us do what we want, Anglos, we're going to put a nuke in the sea called Poseidon and make you go under the sea, or we're going to do this and that. We're going to drop nukes on you. We're going to nuke London.
Medvedev has a giant fucking mouth compared to all the other figureheads.
Recently, this talking head, the Jew Solovyov, wanted to create a biological weapon to target only the Anglo-Saxons.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Just crazy things, dude.
Which I don't know even how this will work. I mean, only the people that are speaking English or like...
Gingers.
Gingers, okay.
Well, that would kill the Scots then, dude. I mean, like, we don't want that with the Irish. Right?
That's the closest thing I can ever think of, for people with bad teeth.
Oh, this will answer the Belfast question as well.
Oh, you want to talk about the Troubles?
Well, do we still all want to do the introductions?
Well, we still have a lot for Russia still.
Anyway.
Now, I mean, maybe I can add a little bit about Prigozhin and things like that with the first about Jan. Now, the situation with I can understand why Britain and America have America is the leading force, obviously, but Britain is also like a continuation of America, right? And that's why Russia is looking at them as the main enemies, and not to mention that Britain have nuclear weapons, and the only other country in Europe that actually have nuclear weapons is France. But France is very in the midst of the situation. I mean, they could be ally with China and even with Russia at some point. So the French, they have their own leftovers from their African empire that they are losing because of their stupidity. And their plan is to open the gates of Europe, or at least of Western Europe, for African migrants to boost their rank, so to say, to boost their economy. Because basically these protesters that are screaming and shouting for some time, for 1 year later retirement or something, what they will do is basically they will push the button for even more migration from Africa into France. This is one of the aspects, which of course will destabilize even more France. The other stuff is that from what I've get, the trading empire France, basically after the Second World War, they kept their shadowy empire in France, and a lot of country, like 15 countries or so, basically kept the franc as a reserve currency. And these basically behind the scenes kept the French economy for quite a long time. Now this is replaced by dollars, I believe, but also interestingly enough by the Chinese. Chinese are replacing with yuan, I believe. And this is also quite interesting development in Africa. That's why Jan maybe will give a little bit more information. And also recently, Wagner started to basically kicked out the French out of some of the Central African countries. And they established their bases. Yeah, of course. And they have mines for diamonds, gold. And the most strategic and most important thing is basically uranium, which is extremely important for French economy, because from what I've get, three of four, basically like three quarters of the electricity in France is produced by this uranium that they're gathering in Africa. And now Wagner is basically pressing them. And what happened yesterday with Prigozhin is very interesting, because Wagner is not a private company. Basically, this is the wing of the military intelligence of Russia. So what happened yesterday is very suspicious for me. I mean, I personally don't think that I don't think that Wagner will be removed. Maybe they will change the name or something, but basically the structure of Wagner is extremely important for the existence of Russia and for their operations, so to say. And also, there is another thing. If there were, this was a fake, some people suggest that it's a fake, basically, coup d'etat. In that case, maybe this is the beginning of the transition of power from Putin to, I don't know, maybe even to Prigozhin. Who knows? And about the Ukrainian offensive, well, it's not a swiping offensive, obviously. They're not like, it's not a blitzkrieg. So, what else to say? Maybe some of the other guys will know a little bit more what is going on there.
If I could, again, interject here, me and my friend, we actually run a show that covers the war weekly, and I'm actually building our PowerPoint for the week right now. If I could just divulge a little bit more into the complications of the counteroffensive right now, if it's fine with the host.
Go for it. And your name? Because I just see you as guest.
Yeah. It's CG. I am the head of the Warcast, but we are underneath the network of Radio Ruin headed by Dirty D. Alex is a co-host on the show, and we have another engineer by the name of Dan Viking on the show. So anyway, that's our introduction. So the complications with the counteroffensive is that looking at the Russian defenses recently, the analysis that's been coming out from people that have been looking at for the last 2-3 weeks is that the four main strengths of the Russian military is their engineer corps, basically, because there's about a company of engineers attached to every brigade, I think. The engineering bits of their army are actually pretty good. These defenses, obviously, are very hard to breach. The mine networks are obviously very difficult. They're very extensive. But the other things that are kind of more tangible, is the electronics warfare side of things. Russia's actually been fairly adaptable to this, though, which has been impacting the drone warfare Ukraine's been trying to flex on Russia with. They've been adapting a little bit recently, though, so that's good. But we've also seen an uptick through Oryx, which photo documents confirmed kills on both sides. They noticed an uptick in the amount of artillery and MLRS systems being destroyed on the Russian side. So this segues also to the other part that we all know that Russia has a shit ton of fucking artillery pieces. So with all that put together, Russia's been able to set their defense in depth, set up security zones, and set up these columns that, you know, or what maneuver warfare is, into kill zones, pre-coordinated fires through these artillery systems and destroying tanks, because the tank can't withstand a Sabo round, maybe, but it can't withstand a high explosive round typically. And knowing that that's the problem, the military of Ukraine's been trying to circumvent these issues. They have been making slow progress south of toward Vasilivka, and which is southwest of Orkiv, and the other axis is Novosilka. They're trying to get south through the creek there. The ways they're trying to find go around this is that they need to establish air superiority with Western electronic warfare systems, which is why the F-16 is so important, which won't get there till September at the earliest, I think. Because trying to adapt MiG-29s to Western technology is incredibly difficult, which creates it creates a cap on how many conversions you can basically put out, right? How many of their platforms can deliver Western anti-radiation missiles, mainly the AGM-88, which is the HAR missile. It's a missile that's designed to basically destroy radar systems, which is what those SAM systems and everything else with the UW side of things Russia is really doing well with. The other thing is, again, obviously the artillery system. So by using the counter battery game, they've actually been pretty good at that, though, because the West has given them a lot of what they call artillery radar systems. So any time there's a fire mission from the Russian side, they'll track the trajectory of these rounds, and then they'll input into their computer, and they'll use typically Excalibur rounds, which are precision artillery rounds, and they'll one-shot destroy these artillery systems that the Russians use, whether it's D-30s, some other mobile systems, the Mistas sometimes. There was a video one week or two weeks ago. There's a battery of 5 Mista artillery systems that were destroyed in a tree line within like 5 minutes. So that they're really emphasizing on trying to destroy these assets in depth, because those are behind the second line of trench works. So what this leads into for the counteroffensive is that at this point, we have to also draw parallels historically, though. The best one a lot of people use is Desert Storm, right? Because that was the best like maneuver warfare we saw in the last 30 years. A lot of preparation was taken at that time with air superiority to degrade the command and control of the Iraqi army, the infrastructure, the government, all these things, right? Communications. Ukraine doesn't have air superiority, obviously. So they're trying to asymmetrically work it that way, again, with drones and their own electronic warfare and battery fire. So a lot of this is what's called shaping the battlefield. Unfortunately for us, the West, I guess, we have a very limited amount of patience for that sort of thing. So we're used to big spectacles. These things take time, obviously. What I was really hoping for with this whole coup thing, to tie it back to the, you know, this week's big story, is that if Prigozhin controlled Rostov, that is their main rail hub going into the Zaporizhzhia front, which is where all the active fighting really is taking place. If he controlled that and if things escalated to where it was a shooting kinetic conflict between Wagner and the MOD troops, which is what I call them, that would have cut their supply lines going into that front. So that was a golden opportunity that just evaporated into the fucking history of Russia. If that hub was controlled by a hostile force outside of Russia, Russia's command and control, basically, that would have had a knock-on effect on that front there, too. You would have had an evaporation of ammunition, water, food, morale, everything going into that front. It would have been a golden opportunity for Ukraine to take advantage of that, but it obviously didn't happen. So that was my major frustration, unfortunately, this whole time.
Yeah. Well, they're also softening up quite a bit with the bridge that was destroyed in Chongar and all those other ones where now literally the only way to get access to Crimea is to drive through Krasnodar Krai all the way through the Crimean bridge all the way over. It's way too risky for any type of military columns to cross those three roads that feed into Zaporizhia from Crimea. So, and now we're also, the Ukrainians are expected to get ATACMS missiles too, and the Storm Shadow is already doing one hell of a job. And so the morale we're seeing now is starting to, at least what I've been able to tell from some of the leaked phone calls coming in from units based in Zaporizhia and Kherson, the morale is significantly declining because of these shaping operations. How long it takes to the straw break the camel's back, I don't know, but it is having a significant effect.
Yeah. What is the estimation of Russian losses?
Nobody really knows, dude. The best estimation is off of the British intelligence.
Not really truthful about it, are they? Because it goes back to like Soviet-style propaganda. So they don't want it to look like they're losing. But I put my hand up because I've been wanting to say that I didn't realise you were the guys off Radio Ruin. You do some good content there, to be fair.
I appreciate it.
I've been watching you for the last few weeks. The only problem I've had is I couldn't watch the part 2 Rome video.
Oh, the movie night,
The movie
night. Well, I loved watching the first one, to be honest with you. I thought it was brilliant, your takes on it and all that. And when you were talking about going to foreign countries and meeting foreign women, and you said, "Oh no, I wouldn't touch the Afghan women. They look like something out of Wrong Turn."
Oh,
that was D who said that, right?
That was D. Well, I've been near the sandbox. I haven't been in. Well, he was in Afghanistan though. He wasn't in Iraq, but same region. I've been to that area of the world, and you don't want to touch those women, dude. They're hard pass.
You don't like mustaches on a woman?
Well, it's either below the nose or between the eyes, dude. So you're gonna have one or two unibrows on them.
instead.
Anyway. Yeah.
Well, if I may ask a quick question for you two. So you don't have accurate measure of the casualties for Russia, but how about equipment losses and how long can they sustain that?
Best equipment losses. Let me check Oryx here. The amount of, let's see here. So I had to give you some backdrop on this whole thing. So there was a gentleman on the YouTube channel. He literally went through all the Google satellite images of every depot of every like tank depot that you could find in Russia. Like he counted everyone he could see. And again, this is meticulous work. Supposedly, and again, this is all estimate because you can't look at the tank from a satellite and say, oh, this one works, this one's rust. Best off he could say, because a lot of these depots are just in the open air. They're not like in underground spaces, though. So a lot of these tanks are rusted away. The old number was that Rush had tens of thousands of available tanks. Based off his estimations, this is kind of what most people go with because it's the most like exhaustive research. It's a few thousand. Based off the allegorical stories we're hearing about D-54s and T-55s being rolled out, and there was a V-bed that was used last week, packed with like 6 tons of explosives that was destroyed near a trench line. So these guys are coming from Syria, from Russia, are using ISIS tactics in Ukraine, packing their old tanks with TNT and just rolling it forward and detonating these big old things. Anyway, based on the fact that they're having to pull these things out, and what was the other metrics we found out?
The equalization.
The what?
According to the Oryx report, they were saying with all the
there's a graph
of water tanks that equalized with Ukraine.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get the numbers here because the best they have is a T-90M. The best that I can't forget the name of their tank factory. They could produce 20 of those a month. So 120 a year that they can make new T-90s. And then they opened up a half dozen on the low end of these old tank factories, so they're refurbishing old T-62, 64, 72s, and T-80s. T-80s is kind of a weird beast because they try to put a turbine engine in it, and it doesn't really work well. But anyway, a lot of them are old diesel engines. So with these new tank factories, old tank factories being reopened, and the current one pumping out modern tanks, I think, what was it, about 100? I'd say 100 or so. Not really. I did some math. I forgot. I have to go through my notes again. But the amount of tank losses is still going to be about plus 50 toward the loss column for Russia. They are meeting that deficit better by pumping out so many old tanks that they can take out of stock. Again, these stock numbers are kind of like, you know, still ephemeral. But yeah, they are still going to be losing tanks, though. If they are still they're running up against a hard wall eventually because they don't build these tanks as much as they used to. But they're adapting.
So you think the tanks? Sorry, you think the tanks will be where there's sort of critical failure will be in equipment first, the thing that'll kind of stop any sort of advance.
That's
because you mentioned tanks first.
Yeah. Well, that would limit their offensive capabilities. So what they got right now, they'll probably be able to hold because the best that they're able to use tanks is for direct and indirect fire at this point. Problem with that is that you don't use tank barrels for artillery because they're precise. They're precisionally tuned barrels that you want to hit far targets with a small amount of error. So you have artillery barrels. Artillery barrels are meant for many shots over a long time, right? Tank barrels, not so much. But if they lose their amount of tanks to where it's just absolutely depreciated, they won't be able to regain that offensive initiative, which I think at this point we can all agree that's not going to happen. The big thing I would really worry about is their artillery capability, because they've switched into the defensive posture right now. To tie this into the coup attempt, the reason why I think it's kind of a good for Ukraine at this point is that, one, Wagner's out of the picture. Those are their only real offensive weapon that Russia was using anymore. I mean, Chechens kind of, but Chechens are pussies, basically, at this point.
They're too busy filming on TikTok.
Yeah, Akhmat's not really that good. which is kind of just as a side note between me and D's experience in that part of the world, the Chechens were like known as hard fighters, but come to find in conventional warfare, they're not that good. Anyway, point being though is that with Gerasimov, who is the theater commander for Russia, and then Shoigu, who's his boss, those guys have to save face, and the Russian state being what it is, they're going to have to launch another offensive with depleted assets, very bad morale in their army, to save public face in with their constituents in Moscow and St. Petersburg. Because if they just allow that to happen without saying, oh, well, we're going to flex and inflict more harm on the Ukrainians by launching it more missiles. Go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off, bro. It seems that a lot of Caucasian people, I don't mean like Caucasian as in white, I mean like a lot of them seem to hate Russians. You get like one or two like Armenians or Ossetians that love Russia, but it seems like they've been a really big pain in the ass to Russia. It seemed like that they've had a few wars. Georgia's had a few wars with Russia. Chechnya has had two. I watched a video about some North Ossetians fighting the English people and the English people being resentful to Russia because they picked the side of the North Ossetians.
Mm.
And then you've got the Dagestanis that also seem like they don't. But it seems that Russia gives them money, like Dagestan and Chechnya. Russia gives them money so they don't fight. And now it's like Las Vegas, where it's just money and betting casinos and whores and a lot of cocaine. Seems like that they just give them money so they don't revolt.
You're talking about as far as like the social benefits for them enlisting in the army?
Can I add a little bit? So basically, Russia is this area of Russia is vitally important for the Russian Empire. That's why in the Second World War, Hitler was trying in 1940, this is more in the area of Jan, he was trying in the 1942 to attack on the south, contrary to what his general was trying to advance, that they must renew the attack on the capital, on Moscow. But the idea is that if you attack the south, you're cutting the main transport area Volga, you're cutting the oil supplies, and you're cutting the whole connection between basically the Middle East and Central Asia and the European part of Russia, and this will accelerate basically the falling apart of the Russian Empire. That's why this is one of the many arguments. There are many, many arguments that actually America and NATO country were not seeing Russia as a immediate threat. If they wanted to destroy Russia in the 90s, it was extremely easy to destroy Russia. Like basically for very cheap. It will cost them literally one something of the money that they spent in Afghanistan arming the Mujahideens. But they didn't do that. Exactly because of the reasons that the American guy mentioned in the beginning. They don't want to deal with fundamentalist Muslims, with fanatical communists, with nuclear weapons, and with Central Asians, and most likely with China. They see Russia as a barrier against China, which at some point maybe will bite us in the ass, because Russia is turning to be more and more Asian than European, and they are not reliable, not stable. And furthermore, I think that the White House, that there was a rumor from Ukrainian sources that the White the Washington was not very happy with eventually Prigozhin taking the power in Moscow. And this is the reason was that I think that Washington have the much better information than us. And they know that behind Prigozhin, there are more radical or was more radical elements of the military intelligence in Russia that want to optimize the military apparatus of Russia. Meanwhile, Putin is seen as a more like peaceful type, funny enough.
He's a risk-averse actor. Yeah. He tries... Well, and he's a risk-averse actor. He wants to maximize gains with as little cost as possible. Which goes to tie into his personality of his past, which is what some people know, is that he worked in the KGB, right? But he wasn't an intel officer. He was a lawyer.
Yeah.
So that's why international law was always such a big thing with him. He's always talking about the Munich Accord or, you know, our attempt to join NATO. You know, he's always laboriously talking about, oh, this treaty, that treaty, this agreement, that talk. Well, I was totally threw my train of thought off there. But anyway, go ahead.
That was really interesting that I didn't know that he was a lawyer, because I'd noticed a special military operation instead of just declaring war.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Yeah, so to give you another example of that, though, the reason why he was so hard, this is one of those things in the background, just studying these things I have to give out, that the reason why he wasn't able to commit conscripts to Ukraine was because by Russian law, they can't deploy conscripts outside of the borders of Russia. That's why he needed to have that that annexation or referendum, as they call it, happen. So that way, by incorporating them into Russia proper, he can move in those mobiks into the newly annexed part of Russia. So you didn't have this deluge of mobiks moving in until that bit of law happened. He's not going to break his own law books, I guess. It's kind of weird. But yeah, so typically you would, most powers, like, yeah, whatever, just move the guys in, right? But no, he was following his own law there because he was going to break his own constitution, I guess. Which goes further back, you know, the Battle of Kyiv was by contract troops, you know, VDV and Naval Marine Infantry, stuff like that. Though these are all volunteers because they have a two-tier system. They have their conscripts, which they call up every 6 months in Russia, and then you have the volunteer side of things. That was their attempt to professionalize into an American tier sort of military. Mm-hmm. Those were the guys going into Ukraine in the beginning in February 24th. So anyway,
do you guys think that Putin would be desperate enough to enact the next step of mobilization?
Sorry, do you mean me? Oh.
Anyone, I guess?
He will, but right now there is a... I mean, the Russians are using shadow mobilization. I mean, they're using, for example, the Ministry of Defense, they took many of the function of Wagner. And they're mobilizing prisoners, like really desperate types, like rapists and literally cannibals. Right.
Yeah.
Like cannibals and all these
people from prisons. And,
yeah. Also, there was another thing that some people were missing. Now, Rostov-na-Don was basically the city that basically fell under Prigozhin yesterday. And this is the main hub, supply hub, and also was the head of command. But also people were mobilized there. And what the people were missed from the whole picture was that early in the morning, there was a bunch of Syrians and niggers like watching the Wagner troops taking the command. And what they're doing is that they're recruiting behind the scenes, they're recruiting all these third world refugees into Russia. Like they're these, and then they promise them to, because a lot of them don't want to stay in Russia, but they promise them to arrange them documents and to send them in Europe. So
there's Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So this is what is going on, and you know that I was back in 2016 in the border patrols. I saw quite a lot of guys that were not fucking Syrians. They were most likely coming from Caucasus region, or maybe even if they were Syrians, they were guys of the Russians. The Russians use all these waves of refugees, and the Turks too. Turks also. They're using these waves of so-called refugees as a political tool for pressure against the European Union. This is a fact. I mean, and also I started to think that China maybe is using the Mexicans to some degree and the Mexico cartels to pressure America. But maybe this is just my theory. Like,
no, you're 100% on the money with that. Yeah. Most of the foreign fentanyl supply is directly imported into those major ports in Tijuana, all throughout Mexico, and it's then being carried through the cartels through the U.S. border. Yeah, and it was a staggering number that I think the Coast Guard released. It was like over 75%. So yeah, they're basically using subverted like drug warfare to fuck up the American populace.
Question for you two. And I guess we're kind of migrating slowly into the area of topics we planned. So
yeah, I think we got off track here, but
do we want to circle back? Or?
And I'm just saying, since we were supposed to give a little bit of information about our regions, why do you think that nobody in any position of power in the U.S. just like the CIA? Why don't they just behead the cartels? I think. Ideologically, we may have our assumptions, but let's leave ideology behind for a second and not let it influence our reasoning here. And just why would they do that? Why do they just allow that kind of stuff to happen? Do you think?
Why do the federales allow the cartels to exist?
Well, specifically that and allow stuff like fentanyl to come.
Oh, well, that's I have to give you two answers to that question if you don't mind. You want to go first, Alex? I feel like I'm hogging the mic here. So.
Okay. Well, it's just on an elementary level, I guess. Number one, the fentanyl crisis is good for the left in this country because it's killing a lot of white people in predominantly red areas. So it's essentially a win-win for them in those areas that they're slowly trying to take control. Combine that with the double whammy of importing Mexicans and low labor skilled jobs, like as crop picking, farmhand labor, and all that kind of stuff. And they can basically transform an entire county in the span of a single decade, as we've seen in a lot of areas in Texas and all throughout the Southwest and California. That's without going into, you know, the whole ideological angle, but yeah, CG, you can carry off that.
Yeah. Why we haven't done it yet. I mean, we tried to do that with, what was that era?
Medellin cartel.
The Medellin cartel, right. That was like a genuine CIA control of the cartels at best. Right. Like they tried to do that for a while. You just can't like, go and just kill these fuckers because there's always going to be someone to step in. So that's problem one. I haven't got to the answer part yet, but the second part is that with like Duterte, who was backed by the Chinese though, but he did the right thing in my estimation. He went after the pushers and the users. So he was punishing the guys buying the drugs and also the guys selling the drugs. You can't cure the drug problem until you do that, though, and to give Mao, and I sound like a fucking Duganist right now, but Mao did do one thing right, though. I'll give him this, though, because the opium trade in China was so bad that, again, such humiliation, blah, blah, blah. He went after the drugs and wiped it out of Chinese society. He did what had to be done. He went after the users and the sellers, wiped that problem out, though. You're not going to have that happen in Western countries because of the idea of, you know, individual sovereignty and human rights and crap like that, right?
Heroin is part of my human rights.
I know, well, that's but this is the reality of it, though. Like,
yeah, that's literally
our morality, though. It's that is a backstop for us that we need to overcome as a movement, though. Like, we need to figure out the historical arc for us in our own background and in our own history as a race to overcome it, to make sure we can go to the next step to ensure the survival of our people, though. Because this is a major problem. It is literally killing people. I mean, hell, I had a family member. I'm not going to name who or where or how the relation is, but he died of that shit. So this affected me personally very, very deeply, though. So it has to be figured out with some sort of idea of where the morality is coming from and to decouple it from the public consciousness, though, if you want these things to happen. But again, but to the two answers, though, why the U.S. hasn't done it politically, the most relevant answer is that if you send in the U.S. Marines and they start shooting brown people in Juarez, you're going to alienate, what are they, like 15, 18% of the population now of the Mexicans?
Oh, Beaners?
Whatever. Beaners, yeah, whatever.
Oh, you know, dude, Beaners are like 36, maybe, and then not including illegals.
Well, blacks.
Oh, no, sorry. 25.
Yeah. That sounds a little high, but blacks are about 12%. I know that much. Asians are about a handful percentage, and depending on who you talk to.
I'll look it up. I'll find the same number.
Yeah, yeah. They're a significant portion of the U.S. population, though. If you do that, you send them Marines to Juarez, you're going to have an explosion of violence, not only to Juarez, but also in El Paso, right? It's right across the fucking border there. Texas is going to blow up. Southern California is going to blow up. New Mexico, for what it is. Arizona, stuff like that. The entire American Southwest will turn into a fucking balkanized. It is the size of the Balkans, really. But it's just desert and a few highways. It would be really messy.
19, you don't think it could be done in a clean way? It would devolve into urban warfare.
Whenever the LAPD tries to do these things in their own backyard, doesn't it devolve into urban warfare? I mean, like, the gangs start shooting each other to take over turf, over customers, you know, means of production, stuff like that, though. And this is just how this system works. Like, it's one government system versus another underground system. They just have to live side by side because the blood on both sides would be terrible. I mean, obviously the state controls a monopoly of force. If it wanted to, it could do it, the damn thing. But due to the democracy we live in, whoever did it would be committing political suicide. The Republicans would not survive. That would be the opportunity for us to create genuine national sentiment because they would lose any legitimacy in the mainstream, basically. You know, well, yeah, these guys are control. So yeah, our soldiers are dying in, you know, Juarez. We need to back them up, you know, because brown people are poisoning our people, right? This whole thing. That would just create such a problem for mainstream politics in the United States that they're not going to take that step. So that if for them, it's better to let the poison in and kill us slowly than just, you know, bring down the bullet and, you know, put out the back of their head. So you've got those statistics. Go ahead.
That's very interesting stuff that you're describing there, and it's basically showing that the more diversity you have, the less action you can take, because you've got all kinds of other people that can become a problem. So it seems like what the Jews are doing is working quite well, that they're quietly tying you up in all kinds of little ropes and things so you can't get out of it. And here in South Africa, to some degree, we've been in a similar situation. But I must tell you that I think the end game, when I look at our problems here and when I think about where we could possibly go in the future, and when I look at Africa, I reckon that I'm a believer in going in and shooting the people that need to be shot. And I think that in the long term, the only way that things are ever going to get done is by going in and cleaning up all kinds of people everywhere. Just going to be piles and piles of corpses. That is, in the end, I think that's going to be the only way out for any of us. Is It's just going to be lots and lots of shooting everywhere. You're going to have to shoot the people inside. You're going to have to shoot the people outside. And when they're, you know, and it's quite fascinating that you guys, with your borders, with Latin America and so forth, that all of these things are originating out of Latin America, and it's making hell in America. You know, that alone should show that all this diversity shit doesn't work. Now, we in Africa, we got similar kinds of problems where we've got stuff coming in over our borders as well. And it just makes for mayhem. Eventually, you're going to have to shoot people inside the country, outside the country. I'm a firm believer in a return to whites in pre-Christian mode. I think that'll work quite well.
Sorry, but do you cut you off? I mean, do you mean more blacks, or do you get North Africans? Do you get like Indians there? Because I know there's Indians there and Pakis or Arabs.
Are you
from,
asking
like the Gulf, not North Africa?
Are you asking about the non-whites that we've got in South Africa?
Yeah, I know you also have Indonesians as well.
Okay, let me just summarize for you what we've got and how they work. We've got our normal local blacks here, but we also have blacks that have run away from all their failing, collapsing countries in other parts of Africa. Sometimes they come in, and then sometimes they go away. Like we've had Nigerians here. And then
we get a lot here, especially in London.
Nigerians are a big problem, eh? I went to Holland for a few days in 2000, it was around about 2003 or something. And when I was in Amsterdam, and I was talking to the whites, and the Dutch were complaining about their bicycles being stolen. So they said, oh, no, we got our bicycles being stolen. So I said, who's stealing them? No, Nigerians. And Nigerians were freaking everywhere. Nigerians were scamming on the internet everywhere. In South Africa, it's not so bad. They do come here and then they run brothels and they do drugs and all that kind of stuff. But we've got lots and lots of all kinds of garbage doing things. So let me just describe some of the people we got here. So other than the local blacks, we've got foreign blacks. So we've got blacks from Zimbabwe, lots of blacks from Zimbabwe. And we've got blacks from other places. Then we've got Indians. Now the Indians are interesting because we've got Indians who come from India itself, and they were brought here by the British. When the British controlled Natal, they brought in Indians as slaves. And then later on, we let the slaves go, and now the slaves are busy making money, and
the Indians in South Africa are very racial.
They are. They're insanely racial. I've heard blacks saying that Indians are the greatest racists in South Africa. The Indians are the most racist, and it's
yeah,
actually
I've seen this myself. But sometimes I hide it well. I have, in 2020, I ran in a shop because Indians run shops, so I quickly ran in to get some pop. And he said to me, during 2020, you know, we had BLM rioting here also in England. He said to me, I'm going to help the blacks. I said, what do you mean? And he said, I'm going to help BLM. And I said, okay, well, you know, You Muslims might get it as well. You're not exactly popular. And he said, I'm not a Muslim, I'm a Sikh. I said, well, people will see you as the same, especially when you're coming out with things like that. And, you know, I said that this might not be wise for him to say, especially when he lives in his shop. Not that I was threatening him, but, you know, if anyone's listening, but told him that he should be a lot wiser.
Very interesting. Well, over here, the Indians are mostly Muslims. So we've got basically geek-like Asians who were also Muslims, and some of them believe in cutting people's heads off. And in fact, after 9/11, I'll tell you a little story. After 9/11, lots of Muslims all over were very keen to join the war. And after 9/11, I live close to the, not too far from the center of Joburg. And one of the small suburbs nearby, I forget the name of it now, not Melville. Anyhow, but there's a suburb where we had lots and lots of Indians there. And then a very strange thing happened. Suddenly, Indians would disappear. And these Indians would disappear, and their families wouldn't know where they've disappeared to. And they'd even go on TV, and their lawyers would say, oh, you know, Ahmed was here, and then he was gone, and nobody knows what's happened. And these Indians were just disappearing. And guess what? After a time, it started coming out that the last time these guys were seen was at a South African Air Force base, and that an American military aircraft was there, and they were put on American military aircraft, and they were taken away. Bottom line is the CIA, can you believe? The CIA was hunting down Indian Muslims in South Africa, and they were rounding...
They were recruiting them here as well.
Were they doing the same there?
Yeah, they were getting mainly Pakistanis, but also Indian Muslims and North Africans as well, mainly.
Yeah, and these Indians probably ended up in Guantanamo Bay or wherever. But
some CIA black site, right?
But I was pretty impressed. I was pretty freaking impressed. The CIA is busy finding them here. And the Muslims are a whole other story. I'll come back to the Muslims because I want to tell.
Sorry. It was MI6. They were getting CIA, but also mainly MI6. They were doing it through MI6. We're getting Muslims of, like, I don't know what you want to call it, extremists or what. Whatever, getting them to go and fight in Syria against evil Assad.
Very interesting. Okay, let me tell you some other.
He was the new Hitler or whatever.
Go ahead.
Just a question to Jan, because he's talking. How would you evaluate the influence of the Russians in South Africa?
Okay, there's another question as well. Okay, Russians in South Africa. The Russians are a big force in Africa. Of the Chinese and the Russians, I fear the Russians in Africa much more than the Chinese. We've had Russians and Chinese in Africa since the 1960s. In the 1960s, the Chinese and the Russians were very busy trying to arm up blacks and train blacks to fight the whites. The Chinese were busy initially in what is now Tanzania, used to be German East Africa. They set up bases there and they started training blacks there. The Russians were busy in the Congo. But of the two sides, I must tell you that the Chinese bother me the least, because the Chinese... The greatest Chinese success was in what is now Zimbabwe, which is Rhodesia. In Rhodesia, what we had was two factions of blacks fighting us. Both of them were communist, and the one lot, Zipra, were trained and armed by the Russians, and the other one, Zanla, were trained and armed by the Chinese. And so you actually had Russian armed blacks and Chinese armed blacks, and then the Russian generals and officers would come to Africa and they'd talk to these blacks and they'd guide them, you know, how to fuck up the whites the best. And the Chinese would be helping the other side. though sometimes the Russians would even be in the same territory where the Chinese trained blacks are as well. China and Russia worked hand in glove to destroy us whites in Africa. They worked hand in glove, and they did all kinds of things. You know, the Chinese even built a railway line. There's a very important railway line that they built from Zambia. Zambia's in Central Africa. They built a railway line from Zambia all the way to Dar es Salaam in order to take a black state and get it away from using the railway lines of the whites. And they built this huge railway line. It wasn't very successful, and it broke many times, but they went to those kinds of lengths. And the Russians played roles everywhere, but the Russians are really the big ones, because when it came to the heavier and heavier fighting, the Russians played a big role. So let me just tell you, in Zimbabwe, Zandla ended up winning. Zandla won in Zimbabwe, and so Robert Mugabe and the current government of Zimbabwe is totally tied to the Chinese. They love the Chinese. The Chinese are their main...
I've heard the Chinese are colonizing Africa. I watched a video... Sorry to cut you off, by the way. I watched a video of a Chinese man who's a documentary. He said the Europeans left you everything. The knowledge, the... build.
Empire of dust.
Empire of dust, yeah, I was about to say.
Yes.
That was it. But also, yes. A lot of Muslims... Well... There was a big group of Muslims. It was on a BBC Panama documentary where they had went to fight in the Balkans, mainly Pakistanis, Brits. And I believe that MI6 helped them there as well. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Okay. Jan, I'd like to ask you two questions specifically. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No problem.
But so with the other populations, the non-African populations that aren't white, do they get butchered at the same rate?
Okay, very interesting question. You know what? These people butcher, they butcher each other in all sorts of ways. The Indians are a big surprise, because I'm going to come and tell you some stuff about the Indians and the Muslims that totally surprised me. Then the other group of non-whites is the coloreds. They would be called mixed race. Alex Linder refers to them as mulattoes. They're sort of half white, half black. So the coloreds are another group of non-whites, and they've got their own kind of culture and stuff, and they stick together. They engage in a lot of crime, and they're pretty and they're violent. They can be as violent and even more violent than the blacks sometimes. But so you've got whites, you've got Indians. Because Indians are really the main Asians here. We've got a couple of Chinese, but they don't feature. So it's whites, it's Indians, it's coloreds, and then the rest is blacks. You know.
What
like
about
semi-
the natives?
What about
bush people.
The bush people?
Yeah, what's going on with the bush people? They are like look like a Negro, but they have like Asiatic features.
Oh, you mean like the Bushmen, San, the Khoi, and those? Those people don't even really exist. Most of those people, whatever's left of them, probably live among the coloreds.
They went the same way as the American native.
Yeah, literally, they don't feature here. Nobody cares about them.
But I said earlier on that a lot of Muslims, I changed that to a big group because I don't really know if it was a lot. I don't think it was, but it was a big group, and it was on a BBC documentary, Panorama, and they basically joined Al-Qaeda and went to Bosnia. But the Brits, this is what I was going to say, a lot of Brits, to be honest, buying this rubbish, the white South Africans are racist, they evil, the blacks, they don't feed them. And I've spoken to a few idiots like this. Now I've said, look, the white South Africans are farming, they're bringing them food, and what do everyone else what does the Black Sea in return? They kill them in horrific ways. And unfortunately, we you have this eternal Anglo shit where they're like, oh, you know, Mandela was good. White South Africans bad racist. And then I take them look at what Mandela had around him. Was better than what it is now. South Africa is today, to be honest. Same with Rhodesia, and unfortunately a lot of Brits don't understand this, and we get a lot of South Africans, and when I was in college, I met some Dutch ones, and I said, oh, where are you from? He said, South Africa, and I said, oh, like Mandela. He said, no, Mandela bad, and I said, oh, I thought he was like a good leader, and then I got educated, because I didn't know what I know now. He said, no, he's a terrorist. He blew churches up and factories and all sorts. And his wife burned people on tyres. But then I spoke to some South Africans of British descent, and they tend to be shit libs. And I've said to one, you know, like, you helped ruin South Africa in a way by being a shit lib. And we don't want you to come here and do the same to us. We've got enough problems as it is.
Patrick, now you're talking. Patrick, over here in South Africa, the real problem we've got between whites is the majority, you know, let's say 60 or 65% of the whites are Boers, and they think like Europeans, okay? And they are sick of these people. They know these people are trouble. And then the other part of the whites are all these British types, and they're exactly the way that you
bullshit.
Just...
You can't judge them. We all individuals type of shit.
Man, Patrick, you are nailing it dead on. And they come around... They think like liberals. They're exactly the way you describe them. These shit libs. They're constantly sucking up to the blacks. They constantly can't. They don't have the balls to want to be with their own society. They don't fit. They don't really fit in with the Boers. But then they go and they suck up to everyone else, and they're constantly actually stuffing it up for us. And you know what's the latest? The latest is whenever times are hard, more of those kinds of whites are leaving South Africa, but more Boers are staying, and so we are slowly. Some of those stupid assholes.
Well, at least you're getting rid of all
leaving.
The rubbish.
What's that?
At least you're getting rid of all the rubbish, the shit
yes,
libs.
Yes.
And...
Now, I just want to. I've seen that Volga Jaeger's hand has been up, but I just want to try and quickly tell you guys something about the Muslims, because this is going to surprise you. Two important things about these Indian Muslims and the blacks. When the blacks got rid of the whites in Africa, the blacks obviously thought the whites are gone, life is going to be awesome forever until the end of time. Well, they got a big surprise. About 10, 15, maybe even 20 years ago, the Muslims started coming into Africa, and Muslims from the Middle East started turning some blacks into Muslims and Islam. These Muslims in the Middle East must have looked at Africa and said, ah, dumb people, easy to control, let's spread Islam over there. And
they've done the same in Britain. They've gotten a lot of people of Christian origin from native to Britain, the white and Caribbean people. Blacks from Jamaica and blacks from Africa, like the Lee Rigby attackers, were originally
yes.
Christian from a really big Christian family.
Yeah, that whole Lee Rigby thing is
killers,
is,
not attackers.
It's horrific,
sorry.
Hey?
Yeah, it was disgusting, and we just went, oh well, we're all individuals. Every time I see all this. I could go on for 10 hours about how all loads of shit goes on now, knife crime. You've got a lot of white youth here who act like basically wiggers, and you know, unhurt women, like working class white women, on pregnant when they're 16, on heroin and crack when they're 21. It's not good.
Yeah, very interesting. Patrick, and one thing I would love to get, if I can ever get it, I know this is horrific, but if I can ever get photos of any of the crime scene stuff of Lee Rigby, that to me was the most horrific thing that ever came out of Britain.
That should have been when we said enough is enough, rather than like what we did in the Rania Grande concert attack, where we all just go saying, don't look back in anger, and let's just love the neighbour and all this. The problem is in Britain, it's every white man for himself, and everyone else thinks racially where we think individuals, and we're letting our country go down the pan. It's a failed state. And when I said that I'm thinking about moving, which I am thinking about, but I don't know if I will. People say, oh, well, you'll go to a poorer country, live off pennies, where here you'll have good money and you're an idiot. But I think, yeah, but it's at the behest of our safety. You're thinking about money, but like, you can't walk in the street anymore. You can't even leave your house anymore, the way things are going.
Well, Patrick, you guys are just following in the footsteps of South Africa. In South Africa, everybody was 100% into money.
Can I tell you something else about farmers in the UK? This is something I've been wanting to tell you as well that I forgot to. They're trying for hundreds of years, you know, like most of the farmers here are white. And, you know, like, some of them have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years because someone won a battle for some king and he granted them land for winning this battle. And now they're attacking white farmers, not physically attacking like in South Africa, but what they're doing, the government is restricting them, trying to take the money away from them. And then they're trying to make all the Negroes and South Asians, predominantly of the Muslim persuasion, Pakistanis, farmers, and they're trying to take us out of farms.
Yeah, there's a war on white farmers everywhere. Let me just finish with what I wanted to say. So anyway, blacks all across Africa, in all different parts of Africa, especially in North Africa, there are all kinds of Muslim wars that are being started. And those Muslim wars have now been raging. Some of them have been raging for 20 years in these. And you're getting black Muslims killing other blacks. And it's been getting so bad that the French and the Americans, France is like the only country from Europe that dares to try and do anything in Africa. And I'm very pleased with that. But anyway, the bottom line is it's been very fun for me to watch. I enjoy watching the Muslims fighting the blacks. I love it because these same black bastards were against us when we still had countries here. But anyway, it gets even better. Listen to this.
Are the Portuguese not trying to do anything? Because they had colonies in Africa.
Sorry?
Well, like Mozambique.
The Portuguese?
Yeah, yeah.
Portugal is gone. Portugal is gone. They lost their colonies in the 70s. But anyway, I would have thought that
maybe they would have some influence in like France, and maybe they would be sending special forces or something to try and control this.
No. France is the only European country that is actually still active in Africa, and I like it because the French were also supporters of the whites. If it was the French helped the whites of Southern Africa more than anyone else, but once the Portuguese were gone, they were gone, and they don't feature anymore. But I want to tell you something. I want to tell you two things about Muslims that is freaking cool. So in the neighboring state of Mozambique, which used to be Portuguese, there were these Muslims, including maybe even Muslims in South Africa, helped to bring some ISIS people into Mozambique, into the northern part of Mozambique a couple of years ago. And they converted some blacks. They converted some blacks to Islam. Anyway, about 2 or 3 years ago, all of a sudden, these black Muslims who were linked to like ISIS and the Middle East and everything, they started killing blacks, taking over towns, cutting their heads off. No jokes, eh? Freaking slicing their heads off. It was freaking wild. And they actually got some white South African mercenaries to go and shoot these Muslims, and they controlled the Muslims for about a year or so. Wagner was here, but the Muslims cut Wagner's heads off, so Wagner didn't like that, and they left. But these white South African mercenaries were shooting lots of blacks, and then the black government got complaints of racism, so the whites had to go. Anyway, so it's a tiny little Muslim army of black Muslims. I'm telling you, it's like less than 1,000. And can you believe that then with the whites out of the way and everybody else out of the way, they then had to get the black governments to go and fight these black Muslims? Well, what a joke that was. The governments, we've got about, I can't remember how many black countries have got troops in Mozambique, including South Africa. We've got like anything from 1,500 troops permanently in northern Mozambique now. And they've been fighting. They got helicopters. They got everything, okay? And they've been fighting that tiny little band of black Muslims. It's probably now like more than a year and a half, and they still can't fucking beat them. It is fucking awesome. I'm loving it. I love watching the failure of these blacks. And you won't believe, the French brought the best blacks in Africa from Central Africa, Rwanda. The Rwandans killed more of those Muslims. But I'm loving watching all across Africa, and now right here in a neighboring state now, I'm loving watching how all these black countries are so inept, they can't even fight tiny little Muslim armies, and and it costs them billions and billions of rands. It's fantastic. They are so useless. They are such failures. It's wonderful. But I want to tell you another cool thing that happened with the Muslims, because I didn't think, you know, I really looked at us whites and I thought that if we have racial problems, we might need some other group, etc. This is how I used to think 20 years ago. And I thought that maybe the coloreds would be the best. Do you know that under black rule, when black rule came to South Africa, do you know that the coloreds, the mixed race were the only non-whites who voted for a white political party. They voted for a white political party until the last white political party shut down. So that was
because
an amazing,
they understood.
That was an amazing thing. But I want to tell you the final thing, and then I'm finished. Is 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, we had massive violence here in South Africa. It had to do with internal fighting among the blacks in the higher levels. And just to tell you, all the blacks who rule in Southern Africa are communists. They all were trained by either Russia or China. And when Russia and China trained them, the Russians and the Chinese told them that they must spread communism. They'll give them weapons and they'll arm them and they'll help them, but they must spread communism. So believe it or not, despite Putin and everything, these blacks still believe in communism. They believe in Karl Marx. I'm not joking with you. In fact, there's a very special video I want to put out shortly where you're going to hear me interviewing these blacks 20 years ago, and you're going to hear you'll hear amazing things come out of their mouths. But anyway, so what you got is these blacks, The blacks who rule us are commies, and they think in Soviet Union terms. And so they get very irritated with each other, and they start killing each other. They really start killing each other. Anyway, 2 years ago, there's a big spat going on between a former president of South Africa named Zuma and the current one. And this resulted in massive violence that occurred for a period of 8 days. It's the greatest violence that ever took place in South Africa. And the Communist Party and others were behind this, and they got these blacks. They decided that the president who rules South Africa, that they decided that he's linked to the rich. And he's actually very linked to the rich, including the Jews. And believe it or not, this black guy may well have converted to Judaism himself. I did a video about that. So what we got a black Jew. I'll just carry on. We've got a black Jew who rules us, and then we had Zuma, who's a hardcore commie. Anyway, so these hardcore commies unleashed all these blacks, including Zulus, to attack, but the goal was to attack the wealthy. So they went and they burnt down shopping malls and warehouses and stuff. But then when these blacks were busy with that, they then also hated the Indians. And the Indians are seen as wealthy. And so some of the blacks tried to go, some of them did go to the whites, but the whites just kept them at bay in their suburbs. But then they went specifically to kill some Indians in one of the townships. Anyway, so these blacks swarm in to kill these Indians who are Muslims. But what has happened in the meantime that I didn't know was that some of these Muslims had become gun owners, and some of them actually even had AK-47s. So when the blacks swarmed in to slaughter the Indians, these Muslim Indians, the fucking Muslim Indians fought back. And they were shooting the fucking blacks. I've even got video footage where they went to a black squatter camp and set it on fire. Anyway, so it was hilarious that these blacks came to kill these Indians. And the next thing is the Indians are in the back of pickup trucks driving around and shooting blacks. It was fucking hilarious. And then after the blacks had been whipped and the Indians had killed like 38 blacks or something, then the blacks went and they were whining and crying. Oh, we were massacred. We were massacred. Meanwhile, they came to fucking massacre the Indians. And what I learned much later was that there were some whites who were linked to those Muslims. And they'd actually been helping the Muslims. And so, believe it or not, as a result of that stuff that happened 2 years ago, that Muslims, that there are quite a lot of Indian Muslims who are now racists, and they got guns, and they're actually more on the side of the whites than the blacks. That just astounded me. That was something I never saw coming. But I must tell you, as a final thing, that the whites are still in good shape. Despite all of our problems, there's another video that I'm working on. It's a video which is going to deal with blacks trying to slaughter all the whites of South Africa, and I've done tremendous amounts of research in this, and I'm gonna put this out. And I must tell you that believe it or not, the whites are still around. I actually reckon based on all my information that you know what, the Boers are still here, and we are far from finished. But just a final wind-up about Africa. The Russians played huge roles here in Africa. The Russians brought shiploads of weaponry to the tune of billions of dollars in the 1980s. They brought tanks. They brought aircraft. They fought here in Angola. And so for me, I'll tell you something that and all these blacks know that any time they need guns, any time they need weapons, they just talk to the Russians or the Chinese. So for me, I must tell you from a white South African perspective, I actually am happy to see Russia getting smashed because I think that will be much better for us. And China doesn't worry me that much. So, okay, I will shut up and I see Alex and Volga, you guys must carry on. My apologies. Okay, bye.
Well, here the reason I asked that question specifically about you guys, what it sounds like is the Indians, let's say, Muslim Indians, they're not being butchered at the same rate. Would I be correct in saying that?
With regard to farm murders, you'd be quite right. When it comes to normal, crime, they are very much in the same spot as us because they even live in many of our suburbs. Like my suburb is whites and Indians. So we actually have Indians and Muslims as neighbors. And you know what sometimes goes wrong for them is the Indians, by the way, the Indians have made more money after black rule than any other group. So they've made tons of money. They really stick together and they made tons of money. And they've got lots of fancy cars and things. And the joke is that when they're driving all their fancy cars, then sometimes the blacks come after them for their money. I even once worked for an Indian boss, and the blacks got into his house and they tied him up. And so for them, I'd say the Indians and the whites are almost similar in that. But when it comes to farm murders, then that's a whole other different game. Then I believe that the blacks go after the farmers as a strategy because they know that rural whites are the toughest whites. And I believe Jan, that's a strategy.
Jan, sorry. Did you know that not all the Brits were against white South Africa? The Northern Irish Protestants, I think, really supported the white South Africans. But Sinn Féin, the Irish Catholic Marxists, were going down and meeting with the black Marxists and supporting them. Like, not with guns or anything, from what I know of, but politically saying, you know, we should support black rule and support Mandela and the Afro-Marxists.
But yeah, you see, in those days, we in Africa noticed that there were a bunch of other whites who were like leftists and communists who had links back to Russia. Somebody mentioned Galloway earlier, Galloway. Galloway is a hardcore commie, and he's a hardcore commie, and he even boasts about all the stuff that he did against South Africa and so forth. And Sinn Féin fell into that category.
He also said that when he went to South Africa and a lot of people that were helping him in South Africa were Jews.
Yes, that was brilliant. I love that when I got that. It was fantastic. And another thing I'll tell you, Patrick, is that Nelson Mandela, I've done videos about Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela himself has got Jewish links. Nelson Mandela is a Jewish creation.
But yes, I was speaking to one Brit and he said to me that, Zuma, he makes up that he's for the blacks, but really works for the white families of South Africa. And I said, the rich white families of South Africa. And I said, and then I Googled the richest families and I said to him, is Oppenheimer one of them? And he said, yeah, I think it was. I said, okay, well, they're not white.
Exactly. Oppenheimers.
And most of these families were not exactly how we saw it, let's say.
Yeah, the Oppenheimers are basically the Rothschild sort of agents for South Africa. That's basically what they're here for. The Oppenheimers at one point controlled 70% of South Africa's economy. They owned 70% of every business in South Africa. So The Oppenheimers are the local representatives, but we've still got lots of rich Jews around here. Although the good news is that they're also leaving bit by bit. They're leaving. Quite a lot of them left. In fact, quite a lot of them left about 10 to 15 years ago. There was a quiet exodus of a big bulk of Jewry in South Africa. But the bastards who are staying are the ones who still have lots of money. And they're still doing many things, these buggers.
So this is just, I was trying to get to this point specifically with the questions I was asking you earlier. And my point was, there's this problem that I see in South Africa, and you probably see it too, which is throughout the Western, well, let's say European world. It's that we don't have any sense of unity. So it doesn't matter, you know, oh, well, the Muslims are fighting against the Africans. If we can't pull ourselves together, then it doesn't matter how favorable the conditions are. And so we can see that in South Africa because it's gotten so bad there. And yet there hasn't been this sort of unified front of our people. They're getting the shit beat out of them. I'm not going to put it nicely. So what can we, but further on, what can we learn from South Africa in our countries that may very well get to that point? What can we do, do you think?
That is a very excellent and deep question. I want to answer it in two ways. I want to tell you that South Africa, the whites of South Africa are not finished yet. And the other thing I want to explain to you is, you know, when I look at power, when I look at power, the real problem that happens in the world is that Jews move in aggressively into any society, and Jews, from all their international nonsense that they get up to, they know exactly which things to go after, and they go for all the things that have got money, and then they buy up and control everything else. So, you know, the irony of South Africa is that the average boer who lived here and still lives here, he's actually middle class. Some of them are upper class, but he's mostly middle class and lower middle class. He's just a worker, and he doesn't have that much. And even when there are quite a few of them, what happens is that the wealthy in the country, and the wealthy in the country are Jews and other English and also some Afrikaans. So there are the wealthy are Jews, English, and Afrikaans. And that upper class is all liberal. All of it is liberal. So a richer upper class Afrikaans guy won't stand with a middle class or lower class Afrikaans guy. And so you find that all these liberals actually control so much. They've got so much power, and they operate on their own, and all the common average whites on the bottom, they aren't enough, and they don't have the cohesion, and they don't have the money, and nobody basically has the funds to organize everybody into
something. We have the same problem here.
This is going to be the same everywhere. And so your problem is that this fucking upper class, these upper class liberals, and that's why I tell people that from my own experience,
I bet they look down on the white workers of South Africa, yes, like they do in Britain.
They are disgusting filth. I must tell you, they are absolute garbage, and they all believe that we got to do it multiracial. The only thing that exists is black politics. Oh, white man, shut up! There are even some of these Afrikaans guys who are wealthier in South Africa. We also have another thing that came from Britain, I think, which is Freemasonry, and it turns out that a lot of these people who are also wealthier, that there are lots of Freemasons among them. And so you find that all these people, their minds are screwed. Their minds are either screwed through liberalism or through liberalism or through, through Freemasonry or something like that. I've spoken to Freemasons. I once had a chance to meet a Freemason, and I spoke to him at length, a white guy, a guy who'd been a Freemason. I spoke to him at length. His mind is screwed. He's thinking a bunch of crap.
It so, seems to me that the Freemasonry is Judaism for the non-Jew.
Yes, Freemasonry is a nasty thing. So what I want to say to you guys is that in America...
Before you speak of America, I think me and Alex are probably going to have to step off here. Is there any questions before we step off here?
I can stay for a little bit longer.
Okay, you'll stay for a little bit. I'm gonna step off then.
Okay.
Are there any questions, gentlemen, before we step off the panel? Or I step off the panel, sorry.
I did find your discussion about the war very interesting, and I hope that one day we can have you back and do some chatting again. You really got some good stuff, excellent stuff.
Appreciate it.
What would you consider success of the current phase of the Ukrainian offensive?
Can you rephrase the question? Sorry.
For how long Ukrainian offensive will continue, according to you, and what will be the immediate goals, let's say?
We'll start with goals. Goals is the to push to the Sea of Azov, cutting off the land bridge, and putting Crimea under siege, basically.
Yeah.
To do that, they would have to reach either Melitopol, Berdyansk, or Mariupol. That's their strategic point. A marginal victory would be the seizure of Bilmak and Tokmak. These are highway nodes that would help out the logistics for further on attacks later in this year or next year for Ukraine to seize the land bridge. That depends. I'm trying to step off here. I'm not going to go on about strategy here, but those would be the conditional. A strategic victory would be a complete push to the Sea of Azov. Partial victory would be the seizure of those two towns, including Vasilivka. You know, it's kind of conditional, but yeah. As far as the chances of that, who knows? I mean, like we talked about before, they need to set the conditions for maneuver warfare. Right now, it's not very favorable because they're having to go through pre-coordinated fire missions that Russia has already channeled or will channel their maneuver elements into through the minefields and then just drop heavy explosives on top of them. They need to eliminate the high explosives, deal with the minefields, counter the electronic warfare that the Russians have been using, and what was the other one? Probably attack at night, because the optics for Western technologies is far superior than Russian technology. So that's actually part of one of the adaptations Ukraine's been applying on the battlefield and actually garnering results, because Russian anti-tank guided missiles don't operate too well at night. They still do, but tank optics on Leopards, Challengers, and everything else we've given them are far better than that. Chances, I still think it's favorable. They've only committed 3 out of the 12 stood-up brigades, but we're also looking at, that's just the offensive wing of the thing. Those are going to be their punch, their breaker units. There's also a lot of reserves back. I mean, Azov is reconstituting their old formation that was fighting and dying in Mariupol. That's been reconstituted. There's Kraken. Kraken's been quiet for a while. I think they're in the reserve somewhere. They're waiting to, you know, do their thing. There's other Azov units. I think the 67th, which is the right sector brigade, is floating around somewhere in the reserve too. So their experienced units are waiting in the wings to exploit the breakthrough. But again, you don't do that by just sending tank after tank after tank like the Russians do. They're trying to do it the right way, you know, respecting the lives and experience of their fighting men. So I would say it's still favorable. The more aid we give Ukraine, the better. This is all off open source intel and commentary. So, you know, it's not like we all have a crystal ball or anything.
How Ukraine will counter the air superiority, supposed a superiority of the Russians.
Yeah, that is also conditional on how many F-16s they get. There's also talks of Saab Gripens, which I would like to see myself. I'd like to see the Swedish like air industry actually like outdo Boeing and Airbus for once, and you know, take it to the Sukhoi fighters. But that's just a little funny thing for me. They could probably achieve local air superiority over Zaporizhia. The other thing in the background for the Russians is that they've been running combat air patrols around their border oblasts with MiG-31s, which fire the Kinzhal missile, which is their hypersonic missile. With airframes, they can only log so many flight hours before they have to be really taken care of. Since this has been going on for, 16 months now? Go on to about 18 months in the future, or since the war started, you could probably start seeing some local air superiority achieved by the Ukrainians temporarily in one or two pieces of the theater. Which,
can I ask
again,
you a
would...
question, Alex?
Yeah, sorry.
It's all right. Can you see Ukraine getting their lost territories back, which is rightfully theirs, in my opinion?
Oh, that's CG talking, not me.
You what, sorry?
Oh, are you asking? You're asking here, Alex.
Well, both of you, really, but about you, because you were talking.
All of it or most of it?
Either.
I'll step off after I answer this question. I guess I'll let Alex take up the torch here afterwards. All of it, that is going to require a multi-year campaign. The way they can take Zaporizhia is because the human and ecological terrain is so favorable, because they still have favorable constituents in Zaporizhia to welcome them once they get in there. After that, things tend to turn more toward the Russian favoritism, especially in Crimea. If they take Zaporizhia after breaking through those lines, who's to say that the Russians don't continue digging in deeper in Marinka, Donetsk, Luhansk, Makivka, and stuff, places like that? I don't know. I don't know how far the will to fight is for Ukraine. I don't doubt the righteousness of their cause, but there are demographic realities that they need to realize, though. They can only do general mobilization so many times. I don't know the exact numbers for that, though, but just needless to say that they don't have the manpower supply that Russia does. I would say it's very likely that, strategically speaking, if they can break through the lines in Zaporizhia, they could put Crimea under siege, creating a political crisis in the Kremlin again. With that, the civilians in Crimea would evacuate that are collaborators with the Russian government. The Russians have been moving their logistic centers from Sevastopol to that base in Krasnoyarsk Krai. It's like the most northern one on there. Russia proper there. I forget the name of it. They've been actually moving out Russian assets from Crimea, though, militarily from the Black Sea Fleet. They're setting up alternative spaces for them to operate out of. So it's possible that even they realize that they can't hold on to Crimea. If they do, the Ukrainians would have to deal with some remnants of Russian loyalists that have been under the Russian world for 9 years now. That's going to be hard to push, because you're going to have protests and passive resistance. That's going to start sapping Western support and will. If Biden gets reelected by that time, if that happens,
he's going to start looking. You know your military stuff. Do you think that this could be gearing up for another world war? Sorry for cutting you off, by the way.
No. As we talked about, Putin is a risk-averse actor. That is probably why I would say even outside powers were hoping that Prigozhin didn't take over, because he's not really a risk-averse. He's very much of a risk-taker, at least theatrically speaking. he would have been a much more unstable element in the Kremlin. So I think even the powers that be in the West want Putin where he is right now. He's not exactly the most amicable actor, but he is someone they can quantify to some extent. Bringing an outside element that, you know, was selling hot dogs in a hot dog cart for a while and then became the owner of his own fucking private military is certainly an element they don't want to deal with. So the status quo wants to remain the status quo to an extent. The tactical nukes might happen-ish. He's been taken off the shackles on using that because he also withdrew from the START treaty, which is like a strategic nuclear arms something treaty. It's been talked about getting back on that though. But it's a bit touchy. I don't think there's any possibility of World War III. Russia is not capable of escalating anymore. And if they do use nukes, that's just in the long term going to be worse for them. And I think Putin understands that too. Which is why he's so unresponsive to a lot of these new the asymmetrical escalations the West is still able to flex on him and the pressures on the battlefield. So any conservative that comes to you that, well, we need to get Trump in to prevent World War III, you know, like, no, you prevent World War III by winning the fucking war. anyway.
Yeah, this what is about, one we don't want Trump on. Hey, Trump's going to stuff everything up.
What about China?
Orange Jesus.
What about China?
What are the chances of China escalating in the Third World War?
That's probably better. The thing I like to look at is the population pyramids for both these countries. China's is actually way worse. They're just a bit behind Russia. Russia actually up till 2014 was up on an upward trend of fertility rates, actually. They actually did start putting things into their social programs to curb the alcoholism, the tobacco. Actually, of all things, Philip Morris is still operating in Russia. They didn't put sanctions on Russia, of all things. But anyway. But in 2014, they diverted their resources from internal to external issues. So Russia could actually bounce back from that. They decided to do it. But anyway, sorry. China, their population pyramid is way worse because of one-child policy. And even after the two-child policy now, they're still tanking, you know, way, way, way below what they need. Between them and South Korea, you can expect a voluntary genocide of, like, Northeast Asians, basically. It's just like they don't want to live. Living in Shanghai or Seoul, you know, they just... Who wants to live in an apartment with your parents, your girlfriend, your two kids in 800 square feet, right? Doesn't sound like a good life when you're the only income earner. So it's tough. It's really tough for them. Like it's a sucky life. And if China, so with that in mind, the geopolitical situation is that Russia had to execute the war right now because after this point, they were going to get weaker demographically. Same thing is happening with China. I think in 2027 is when that population pyramid starts shrinking, population wise. So they're
like.
I have
a question for the Americans. The Zika population in Britain is really over exaggerated because people see people like Mark Collett, but in reality, there's not really many Russian support here, very little. Is there a lot in America, like, from what I can see, there is, like, Nick Fuentes and Alex Jones?
No, there isn't. I posted some data earlier. No. Even earlier, or the beginning of the conversation, maybe before we started recording, I said that we all tend to have a sampling bias. So we tend to listen to a lot of people who are these alt-light figures. They don't represent the average person or the average conservative at all. So I think, this was done a year ago. So 68% of conservatives support the United States sending weapons to Ukraine, whereas only 10% strongly disapprove. Another 10% disapprove. So, no, the majority of conservatives are not pro-Russia.
Yeah, that's very true. Thank you. Yeah, that's very succinctly put. Yeah,
a lot of these. Sorry to cut you off, but I'm going to finish this. A lot of these conservatives, they're old people. You know, when they were kids, they were ducking under their desks every month or so, you know, for these nuclear bomb drills. So that mentality is still there to a degree.
That's good.
Yeah. Go ahead, sir. To the China thing, I would say it's possible that they are going to invade. Just because it's a matter of state legitimacy for them, because that was always part of their, like, one China policy, was that Taiwan was just a breakaway state. If they want to become a major player in the great game, they need to break the first island chain, and Taiwan is their easiest way to do that. They are building a very capable navy. It's a blue water navy, not a brown water navy. What that means is that they have the capability of projecting power. That's what navies are. They're diplomacy at sea. By building these carriers, they are building their own entirely indigenous design. I think it's like their 003 project or something like that. It's a nuclear powered with, I think, still steam catapults, but I think they're working on those magnetic ones we have. But anyway, they're building capabilities for offensive posturing. you don't do that just to, you know, keep Japan in check, you know. So it's very possible that they will act on this at some point, probably right before an election. So 2027 would be the right time for that. Again, with the demographics, would be the same time for that. And they would probably have a good chunk of their navy that's amphibious landing capable built by that point. Don't know about training tables for their divisions and stuff, but their navy is very easy to track.
Sorry to cut you off, but I've heard that the Chinese, the Jews of Asia and countries like Japan and Thailand and Vietnam don't like China and Mongolia and South Korea. And
yeah, like every fucking person in
India as well. But do you not think it's possible that the empire of the rising sun could rise again, and all these other countries like Thailand, and put China in check, and maybe Mongolia in the north?
Mongolia has less than 1 million people, and no real industry.
Population centers.
South Korea has the worst birth rate on the planet. I think it's 0.9 children per woman. Japan's at 1.2, I think, and they don't really have an interest in rebuilding their empire now.
Maybe the Mongols can use the horses against the Chinese.
Yeah. I hear they have motorcycles now.
Yeah. Maybe they can go to the wall with the motorbikes. Give them a reminder of the past.
I could argue that we have a worse birth rate than South Korea. And the Japanese.
Lower than 0.9?
Officially, it could be better, but they're calculating the Gypsies and the Turks. So basically, from what I've heard, more than 50% of the kids are Gypsies and Turks. So we have worse than South Korea. That's why, if you remember this advertisement of this bioengineering company that were proposing artificial wombs, they mentioned Bulgaria, South Korea, Japan. So this is the situation. Yeah,
Ukraine's also really bad with
their they're also, but they're in condition of basically a war since, I would argue, from early 2000s, since the Russians are escalating the situation, including economically, before the invasion in Crimea.
What do Turks think about Arab migrants, the Bulgarian Turks? About like Arab migrants or black migrants in the
probation.
Guys, before we dive into that, I'm just going to bow out and say thank you for having us. Me anyway, also Alex. If you ever want to reach out to us, please do so. If you want to come on our show sometime, we'll see if we can find time for an interview.
My pleasure.
Meeting
you.
Good evening.
Just let me shill the show real quick. It's much. So the Warcast, we are going to be broadcasting tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We also have a chat. It's t.me/radioruinchat on Telegram. That's the best place to find us. So anyway, Alex will take it from here for me. So thank you very much, guys, and have a good evening.
Bye bye.
Yep, good later.
Good evening.
So you mentioned about the Turks.
Yeah, I did.
Well, to be honest, I'm not communicating with Turks and Gypsies, but from what I've got, they're not very happy with especially the Gypsies. They're not very happy of because of the invaders. I've mentioned this thing already, but basically what the Bulgarian radical nationalist or skinheads group or whatever managed to do in 2015, including I have a little bit of how to say participation back in these events. There was attacks. Basically the migrants were knife attacks against Bulgarian women, and there was a backlash. Not so much sexual assaults, than they were stabbing Bulgarian girls, basically what they were doing. And then this is interesting timeline, because these attacks and the whole thing with the gang rapes in Germany and the terror attacks in Paris and in France, they started after the European sanctions against Russia. And this
migrants in the UK are also known for sexual assault, as well
I was listening this guy Albion at some point, but he made documentaries about the sexual gangs, quite nasty stuff. What I heard,
was it Radio Albion?
A Radio Albion, yeah.
I used to watch him, but he's really, to be honest with you, he wants Russia to come save us.
Yeah, yes.
He thinks China's gonna, save us.
Yeah. But anyway, so basically what we found out is that a lot of these Muslim groups, it looks like someone is operating behind them. Is it a mafia structures or intelligence groups and things like that? They're a little bit better organized than just a random hominid attacks. And anyway, so basically the local groups, the local nationalists or hooligan groups or whatever, it looks like organized, and there was several cases of killed predominantly Arabs. And from what I remember, 2015 and 2016 maybe, the migrant center or camp or whatever was attacked and burned, and then our genius government decided to move the camp from, basically it was situated next to the capital, next to Sofia. They remove it and create the center next to the border with Turkey, where the predominant population was Turks, Muslims, and predominantly Gypsies, from what I know. Unfortunately for the Gypsies, the Arabs continue to attack them, and the previous year, or maybe it was 2021, there was a case of Arab attacking Gypsy girls and stabbing young Gypsies, and there was a protest.
Oh no!
There was a protest of the Gypsies were protesting with big slogans: "The Arabs are not humans." And
a reversal.
Basically there was a some kind of, I don't even could say racial tensions between them, but they don't like each other. It looks like. or maybe the Arabs are liking the gypsies, but the gypsies don't like the Arabs. I don't know.
That's fucking hilarious.
So basically, this is what I can tell you about what and the Turks. What talking about the Turks? I'm pretty sure that the Turks in Turkey don't like the Arabs. The Turks don't like Arabs or Iranians, and I think this is mutual feeling. The Iranians don't like Turks, and the Arabs don't like Turks. That's it, basically. Ah, and by the way, the different groups of Turks in Turkey don't like each other. This is also a thing. The European Turks don't like the Anatolian Turks. Anatolian Turks don't like the European Turks. Anatolian Turks thinks that the European Turks are not Turks enough, and they especially hate the Bulgarian Turks because they think that they are not Turks at all. So this is Turkey. And by the way, this is another thing, the failed coup d'etat against Erdogan, which some people suggest that Tseryu CIA was behind that. The groups that tried to overthrow Erdogan were predominantly European Turks, and they were in minority, and they were pro-West / pro-American, pro-European, whatever. These soldiers were overwhelmed by loyalist forces for a couple of hours. And what I've heard is that these guys were arrested and raped by the Anatolian Turks. Turks.
Sounds about right.
From the Russians, I guess.
Doesn't sound right, but this is the Turks. I mean,
sounds about right for them.
Yeah. So yeah, Turks. Interesting.
And is the average Bulgarian like welcoming to migrants, or are they very individualistic like us in Britain? So I know Europeans tend not to be as individualistic and, oh, don't be like that. We're all individuals. Like, don't judge your group. You know, the usual.
It's you're trying to tell some kind of quite... On average, I would say that Bulgarians are still kind of conservative, but maybe my information is outdated because I'm not so proactive politically like 10, 15 years ago. But from what I can tell you, most of the Bulgarians still don't like gypsies, Turks, migrants, and homosexuals, to say at least. But this maybe is outdated information, since these different non-profit organizations that were financed by a different shadowy figure pushing their shits.
Well, in Britain, the average man or woman say, oh, I don't care if you're gay, you know, like, do it behind doors, but don't go after the kids, don't go in the education system, don't recruit them and groom them and push your transgender shit or turn them into blue-haired, blue-haired, purple-haired fruitcakes.
Well, these purple blue-haired things definitely are rarer than what I can see from some countries in Western or Northwestern Europe, to say at least. There are rarer cases, but you can still see them more than, let's say, 10 years ago. 10 years ago, they were like very rare. And
it's getting more common here.
This thing with the purple hair, this is my personal experience. This is like a sub, like like a sign from the nature, like sign that this individual woman specifically, but also men, is kind of deviant or degenerate. Like this is my personal observation that
I've got that myself.
It's like a poisonous frog, yeah.
Yeah,
poison dart frog.
Yeah.
Patrick, could I ask you a question?
Analogy.
So it's interesting. I'm not too knowledgeable about your neck of the woods, but you say like this cultural decomposition is really bad, like saying that people are addicted to crack, you know, they don't have jobs, they're just kind of hooligans, and not in the sense of football, but you know what I mean. But why do you think the cultural decomposition in the UK is so bad?
Because we've sacrificed our country for comedy, and you know, 20 years ago, like, your identity would be that, you know, in this region you worked in the pits and the mines, but then you had Thatcher, and then she came along and made like an open market, and a lot of people lost their jobs and went to drugs and didn't really recover, and then they've had more degenerate generations afterwards. And the problem with this country is the ruling class, who are mainly Masons, have become Jews, and the middle class as well, and the working class and lower class, who are people who don't work, have become Negroes, like in America or London. And you know, they think that, you know, you go to school and it's like, oh, you're a virgin, you know, you have to sleep with this many people, and I'm cool because I steal cars, and have you got a criminal record? And they watch stupid shit. I would honestly blame some music they listen to, or some internet influences, like It's Me, Fraz. But also in this country, we have a good economy, but it's declining, and the problem is it goes on to shit. Like, it doesn't go on to it doesn't really go on to roads or things it should be. Like, you know, it goes on to like, oh well, this person's a retard. I don't know how else to put it. This person's a retard, and or she's a retard, and they've both had like loads of different kids with other retards, and now the guy who's working, who's got a family, he has to pay stupid tax for these fucking retards who were sat on their ass taking crack, or just kind of got work, who've had loads of kids and who were in and out of prison. And it's made it harder for the better people, the upper echelons, as the people who can work. It's made it harder for them to have kids because it's too much money. And then on top of that, women have been ruined with all this feminist idea of bullshit, this cultural Marxism. And then you've got the negrophilia aspect. So now a lot of people...
Basically are the cultural... Well, their handlers make them the cultural creators in your society, basically, right?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So you were talking about, you know, I don't want to say it too loud in case someone arounds me or hears me because my roommates just got back. But I'll just type it in chat. The word you said the word earlier.
Oh, like. Oh, Negroes. Yes, you see a lot of youth walking around in fake designer gear with chains, and a lot of them are into petty crime and a lot of them are into knives now, and there's a lot more knife crime. And I believe that this is because they see the Negroes are put out in the UK as the alphas, because they go around stabbing people. They're the very tough man who sell drugs. And they have money and cars and chains and women, like prostitutes, and people, and then you've got people who were people with low IQ and retards breeding more fucking idiots, and they watch this and unfortunately suck it all up. And yes, a lot of women here now are ruined. They're either sleeping with loads of different guys, getting them all to fight each other to see who's the alpha and who's the biggest fucking idiot, who's got the who's the most alpha, who's got the most drugs, who's got the most chains, who's got the best car in that he's bought that he's definitely not got on rent. And women now are also ruined because, you know, if you're having a hard time with money, go on OnlyFans. If you're if you've fallen out with if your boyfriend's disagreed with you, message in the West, a woman will have message if you message a woman on a dating site or Facebook, you will not be 100, you'll be 1 in 5,000, I would say. And like, it's their mind is headed now, and it's about what can I, how many men can I get a fight over me, how many of them I can suck the cocks, what can I get injected into me, what can I get chopped off, what can I get added on. But if you want to go against that and be rebellious, if you're a woman, oh, I don't want to go along with that, I don't want to try and be a supermodel and use all the men against, get all the men fighting over me to impress other women airheads. If you want to go against that and be rebellious against the narrative, you can go be overweight and you can dye your hair blue and you be a fruitcake with piercings, who's unhinged.
So they've really managed to turn, you know, every part of the body against each other, you know.
Oh yeah,
the arm is attacking the other arm, and yeah, they've really. And also, this is, I'm sorry, this is the last thing I'll say, Jan, so you can speak. But I would say, though, like you're talking about the feminism stuff, and that's it's definitely bad. But I would say the opposite of that is something guys like us need to look out for too, because it's just as toxic, and it's designed to put, you know, one part of the body against the other.
Unfortunately,
it's gender Bolshevism, basically.
Definitely. Unfortunately, because we've all been, we've all turned into wiggers. A lot of men are just like, oh, well, I'd fuck this and I'd shag that, and then you look at them and it's like a plastic doll with ridiculous tits, and I'm looking at them and I'm like, well, that's revolting. He goes, oh, well, you're gay, and I'm like, you know, you're going about shagging this, fuck that, I would fuck that, but it's something I don't want to hear. Like, if you find a wife who's, like, loyal to you and who's productive and who's good-looking, I'll be happy for you. But if you're just going to go, ah, fuck this, and I would fuck that, and I would shag her, and I've shagged her, and all these idiots, they look at, like, women with fake tattoos dolled up who look like trannies, to be honest with you, and I think that's what it's all about. They don't get it.
I would just quote Kalergi from his practical idealism. He said that, you know, the most popular quote that the Negro Asiatic race of Eurasia will be similar to the ancient Egyptian population, something like that. The future Negroid race or whatever. But he also said that for the lower class, for the future, this is his prediction, for the lower class people, there will be free wolf. And he wrote this in the 1925, I believe.
Degrade them, in other words.
And for the higher class, there will be free marriages. So basically, this thing is like programmed. And the whole thing is, according to him, I'm not absolutely sure that the guy is honest, but according to him, this is to pacify the Europeans, to pacify and to create these pacifism to remove the war from the society, because according to him, the war is barbaric. And he sees the moral superiority of the, quote, Orientals than the Europeans. But he was, of what? Course... Yep.
Wait, how is he tying back into pacifism?
This is, well, according to him, now this is whole horrible. I think that there is some occult leanings to his thoughts. First of all, he's half Asian. His mother is from a Japanese noble family, I believe. His father is he's Austrian aristocrat, but also he's from Kalergi's family. So Kalergi's family is like old Eastern Roman, or if you want, Byzantine family. And maybe eventually they have some Jewish admixture in them. By the way, these Kalergi's
family... Wasn't Churchill really close with Kalergi?
Maybe, I'm not sure. So basically Kalergi, they also gave... some of the Romanov family, they are also Kalergi. Like, Kalergi family is everywhere. In Germany, in Austria, in England, everywhere. So, and a lot of these, there was a palace in Venice that is named after Kalergi. And they are very big banking family, and they are cosmopolitan. Basically, Hitler said about Kalergi that he's dirty bastard. Literally, he said so about him. And by bastard, he meant the racial German term bastard, like mulatto. Intermixed. But Kalergi is very intelligent, because a lot of the analysis he did is very accurate, but his type of thinking is wrong, because it's very shallow. It's very Jewish and very, I would say, feminine. Like, he thinks that somehow the Asians are morally superior to the Europeans, but somehow he forgot about cannibalism of the Chinese. He forgot about the Oriental type of torture chambers. He forgot about
an entire Chinese history, tens of millions dying in warfare.
And my suspicion is that his father was kind of more harsher with him, and his mother, being Oriental or Japanese, well, of course, mother. And that's why his impression and attraction to the East of the, but I recommend you, maybe I will upload it at some point and make a commentary on that book, because it's quite intriguing, but I just don't have time these days. But it is interesting. He had kind of respect for the Germans, definitely. He said that they're the moving force of these of Europe. But he basically said that a Russian / Slavic Mongolian type is the archetype of the future European, something like that.
So, Churchill was friends with Kalergi, by the way. He brought him to... the UK to do speeches. He represented, said, like, this is Kalergi, I want him to do it.
By the way, Jan wants to speak. I'm sorry.
I will stop.
Okay, guys, I just want to answer those questions about what can be done that will help us all. You know, I've sat and thought about this endlessly in every conceivable way. And you know what? At the end of the day, there are only really two answers. The answer is either money or labor. And I just want to quickly address the issue of the notion that what we are trying to, let's call it market, okay? We're trying to market our ideologies, our racial stuff, and all that kind of stuff. And many people think that what we are trying to do is somehow abnormal or weird, or there's some kind of resistance to it that would come, and that our job is a lot harder than it should be. But you know, when I look at what Jews do, etc., Jews just go and they take a bunch of money and they pump it into something, and they just keep on hammering away endlessly with money, as well as, you know, take like these communist garbage academics, these guys who came from Germany and so forth, these Jews who came from Germany. If you look at them and you look even at like at communist literature, all that these Jews are doing is they spend a lot of time working on their stuff. All the Jews in South Africa who were involved in creating communism in South Africa. Communism in South Africa is basically a Jewish creation. And if you look at all these Jews, you'll see that there, you know, here was a Jew who was the head of the Communist Party for 10 or 20 years, and all he did was he pumped out his stuff continuously and spreading it, and of course other Jews help. And you know, when I look at things like woke and transgender and liberal, I don't really see that it's actually easy for them to get to that. What I see is a link between, let's say, academics or Jewish thinkers who sit and they hammer away at the message that needs to go out, and then you've got others who've got money. And it's really just a linkage between work and money. And one thing I've seen about getting our message out is that there's no particular trick that's going to help us. But different people, and by the way, I must also say, different whites send different messages. And sometimes the messages that come out of the white right or kind of convoluted, and they even go against each other. I've had people come to my website and say, "Oh, so Hitler was Jewish," and no, I'm like, "Oh, no, man, no, forget that." But you know, and they get all confused. But because we've got like Christian types and non-Christian types, and this one and that one, our message sometimes clashes. But you know what? It doesn't matter whether the messages clash. Each message appeals to a different kind of white in a different kind of state of mind. And the one thing I've observed over and over again is that once somebody is red-pilled, once, and I've asked people this many times, once someone is red-pilled, it doesn't matter what red-pilled them. It doesn't matter whether it's the Holocaust, Hitler, World War II, COVID, JFK, you name it. Doesn't matter what red-pills them. Once someone's mind has been opened to the notion that I've been lied to, and I was lied to on a big scale, then the immediate next thought is, if I was lied to on a massive scale once, what else was I lied to about? And from then onwards, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how they were red-pilled. They go from this to that to that to that. And it doesn't matter if they're coming from JFK or Hitler or the Holocaust or 9/11 or COVID, and they all end up at the Jew. So all roads lead back to the Jew. All roads lead back to racialism, and it doesn't matter what red pulls them. So to go back to the answer of what to do, I've sat and thought about it many times myself, like what can I do better? What can others do? And I've got two answers for you, money or work. And I myself started this when I was working full-time, and I had to do this at night and on weekends and everything, and find a bit of time here, find a bit of time there. But I think that if we could put more labor, it's really labor that we need to put into this stuff. You know, and another thing is we must take this stuff seriously. Take it to the highest intellectual standard that you can. Don't mess around when spreading the message. You must think hard and think carefully. And do things to the highest standards that you can. And if we could all, you know, when I think about all of us, and I look at this thing, children, could we have more children? Can we do this? it really just boils down to, you know what, if we could just either get the money or get the people to spend more of their time doing those things, because that is all that really holds us back. And you know what, our message can be sold. I've spoken to lots and lots of people, and I've nowadays, you know, people are getting so freaked out. I've had all kinds of people, even Afrikaans people who never spoke politics to me, and they come to me and they like and they're high IQ. I've got my dentist. There's another lady who's an optometrist, and the optometrist said to me the one day, she said to me, Jan, you know, because we never spoke politics, but she knows me for a long time. She says to me, Jan, what are we going to do in this country? And then I started talking to her, and I was saying to her, you know, there is only like one way. Hey, we got to stick together. So, get out of the notion that our task is impossible or so forth. When I look at some of the stuff that Jews are doing, Jews are just good at marketing. Jews are excellent. Jews have spent all their time learning how to manipulate humans. Jews know psychology. They play psychological warfare tricks on us to scare us. Jews deliberately terrorize us. They terrorize us, and they do it constantly. And then I say to myself, when I look at some of these things, you know, at the end of the day, somebody's got to go to a higher level and win an argument. For example, let me give you an argument that I think Jews have spent a lot of time working on this bullshit, and they've managed to sell it. They have managed to sell concepts like the benefits of bringing in others into a country, and to say, you know what, we bring them in, they're going to be good workers, etc., etc. They've managed to get whites to, they've managed to fool people into the benefits of lower class garbage. The blacks from Africa, they are more sexually, you know, they'll have more children. Those old Canadians, they can't have children, but hey, those blacks, they can have lots of children. You know, they're very fertile, and they'll be good for society, etc. And you know, they are very, very nationalist.
They'll bring them up as well.
Sorry?
They'll be good dads.
Yeah, oh, really? Do they say shit like that, eh? Anyway,
no,
but
no, well, they're doing the adverts. They're trying to portray that in the adverts, yes. but we all know what the truth is.
So when I look at a lot of things that
unfortunately,
Jews,
we're the same here now.
When I look at a lot of things that Jews have managed to pull off, I'm telling you, all they've done is they've managed to make the argument that they've managed to overcome logic with illogic, and they've managed to fool people at a high level. And if we can just get up and we just need to make our argument more often. You know, so for example, how do the powerful do things? I watch them here in South Africa. Here in South Africa, you should see the Jews and the white liberal rich. You know, they do lots of stuff in black politics and liberal politics. They create all kinds of things. I've watched them try to start political parties, that multiple ones, where they start political parties, they suck in blacks, they put them on TV. And you know what? All that's driving it at the end of the day is money. It's just money. And they find some blacks, but they have got money, and they've got access to television and to big media companies. So, you know, for us, it's a case of we either need to accumulate more money. I'll add three things. You need to look at money, that we need to gather money so that we can fund bigger things and have access to bigger things. The other one is labor. We need to be able to get more people to do more. So, you know, if you've got money, you can always hire people. But none of us can hire people. We operate on shoestring budgets, and we hold things together. So, you know, when I look at the problems, it's really a case of money and labor. That's the main thing that holds us up. And there was a third thing I wanted to say to you, and it's now slipped my mind. Man.
Well, balls can help quite a bit.
Well, yes, but here's another thing. I agree with all the statements you made. But also the motivation to do that has to come from something else. And a lot of us, I mean, this relates to getting a message out. But we need to really emphasize the importance of blood. And the thing is, a lot of us in our own lives don't really live by that. We're all kind of lone wolves. A lot of us are very sort of isolated people.
Every white man for himself.
So we need to have the unity of our blood. That's the most important thing, I think. And we need to find a way to kindle that.
I want to I want to add something else to you as well, is that something that we're missing are huge goals and things that draw us. And those are the kinds of things I want to focus on in some of my stuff, because look at what happens. You know something, to turn people into right-wingers and to turn them into racialists is not impossible. Lots of people, there are vast numbers of people who will change simply because they see it's the fashion. Take a look, for example, at Hitler. Hitler said to people in the 1930s and 40s, he said to people, well, it's easy for you now to be a national socialist. You weren't there in the 1920s when we were struggling. And so Jews are sharp. They come and they do all kinds of things. Take, for example, you guys in America. What was that stuff in Charlottesville? Take, for example, Charlottesville. Everyone eventually managed to get some momentum, and you guys are getting amazing momentum. And what did the Jews do? They came to fuck up your momentum. And when they fucked up your momentum by smacking people at Charlottesville and all that kind of thing, and hunting them down legally and all that, then everybody runs away. They've broken our structures.
Well,
we have to be tougher. You're right. But I must tell you that it's a case of money or labor. And this is the third thing I want to tell you. Concentration of power. Ultimately, as we grow and we network and so forth, there comes a point. The place where Jews beat the fuck out of us is concentration of power. Jews come with a lot of money and they pump it into one thing and they can go for it in a big way. So, you know, when I look at their tactics and how they're beating us, they've got concentration of power, they've got focus, they'll send the ADL or the SPLC after you, and they'll come with a budget of 120 million. So as we grow stronger, we will obviously have to filter out and see how can we channel it so that we get concentration of power, so that we got less people, but those less people have got more money and power. And I must just tell you that don't feel bad about being alone and battling on. I've got lots and lots of people who've come to me and have told me how much my videos helped them, how much this thing helped them. I've even recently had people who've come and found me based on my old websites that I was running 15 and more years ago. And the guy says, I remembered you and I came and Googled your name. Oh, and I found you again, that kind of thing. Our problem is that Jews have come and Jews destroy us as a group. They destroy our group behavior through lots and lots and lots of practice. So they've come and they've destroyed our society using strategies that have been used many times before. So, for example, take the rich, for example, in South Africa. The rich, the normal white rich, should be loyal to the normal whites, but they're not. They're not. Their minds have been changed, and they're against whites. So
look down on us in disgust.
Yes, Jews have actually come into our societies, and Jews have captured are top people. And a thing that I've observed, and I've spoken about this many times, is that I'm absolutely convinced that when Jews move into our society, they decapitate our society. They actually come in and they see, okay, there's Jan. He's a racist. We gotta fuck up his income, fuck up his life so that he doesn't function. Oh, and there is Jim, but Jim is an asshole and he's a weakling, and Jim is just groveling for money. So okay, we'll use Jim. Jim can become rich, but Jan cannot become rich.
Jim will become jail. We'll make Jim into jail.
They have that kind of foresight. And they having large goals, yeah, as you mentioned, seeing far ahead, not just thinking in 10 years or 15 years.
Yeah. So these people, they come into society and they slowly, Jews come into our society and filter things out. And so at the end of the day, all we got are these middle class, lower class, poor whites who don't have access to. There's no Hitler to talk to because all the Hitlers have been turned into Jane and you know. So they've destroyed us. We've got a real problem. You know, we are being crushed everywhere, whether it's America, whether it's South Africa. We're being crushed from the top, and our best people or our richest people genuinely believe in multiculturalism and diversity. We've got assholes in South Africa who prefer their black workers because they're making a lot of money out of their business. They need their black workers, and they can and you know they wouldn't be able to function if they had only white workers. The white workers might be more expensive or whatever. But on the plus side, I have got a plus for you. And on the plus side is that watch things like morale. A society is very dependent on morale. And what I love are these people who are breaking away. You know, things like, when white men going their own way, the massive thing of people leaving their jobs, the red pilling. All of these things are signs that people are unhappy and that people are breaking away from the liberal Jewish faggot narrative. And if you look like at Russia, take a look at the Russians closely. The Russians, for example, know that they don't really have freedom, but they've got to do what the state tells them. So the Russians are low motivation people. They don't do much, and they stick within the rules. They don't really like the rules, but they do what they're told. Compare that to the Ukrainians, who are a much freer people. They're much more like us, and they got more freedom, but they got more motivation. And look at the difference between a Ukrainian fighting and a Russian fighting. Right from the start, the Ukrainians are creative, determined. Ukrainians in the early part of the war who went and used drones. They grabbed drones, then they used drones to go and look for Russians. Then they tell their military, the Russians are there. And one thing led to another. You know, people were very creative. They were using the internet and everything. Don't underestimate the power of morale. And I want to tell you that all these societies that have been created, all of them, yours, ours, etc., I've watched our societies are breaking down. And do you know, even the blacks can look at their society and realize that this thing doesn't work so well. And what happens as a society, as all these weird things come up and they see, this isn't what it was meant to be, slowly the morale breaks down. And the time is going to come when all the morale breaks down. And the morale of the whites will break at a time, it will break more or less at the same time. And I can see how people are getting...
Gone here.
Sorry?
Our morale and morals is pretty much gone here in
Yes, now that is good because it doesn't matter if the Jews
non-existent.
It doesn't matter if the Jews control everything at the top. The point is, if the people at the bottom start leaving and stop working, that system's going to collapse. And I want to tell you something about South Africa that I've noticed about whites. We've had whites who've fallen on hard times. Whites have been wiped out. There are whites who've ended up in squatter camps. We've got other whites. We've got a huge suicide problem. We've got all kinds of things. But you know what? There are also a lot of whites who've managed to survive in the face of the impossible. They've actually managed to figure out a way to either have their own little business, do this, do that. You know, and when I look at South Africa and how white South Africans have survived, especially the Afrikaans people have got a very closed society. And Afrikaans people may be very Christian, but their society is very closed. And you know what? That is going to stand them in such good stead. Afrikaans people are going to come out. They're going to come out of this situation. So my final thing to you is this. When I look into racial conflict, I will put out a video with the actual details. But let me tell you my analysis and my summary is that as this society has broken down, and the blacks gained all the power. The blacks control everything. They control the army. They control the police. They control everything. But the blacks are dysfunctional, and they are getting worse. And all their things are falling apart. Meanwhile, the whites are sitting here, and the whites are able to function more and more without the blacks. A simple example is electricity. Electricity comes from a parastatal controlled by the government. Electricity has become a problem because the blacks have gotten rid of the whites. But now, for example, as our electricity problems got worse, it was supposed to get very bad this winter, which is like now, this month and the next 2 months. And guess what happened? Guess what happened? The parastatal could not fix the problems, which we knew. But you know what happened? Large numbers of whites, as well as businesses, went and got alternative stuff. The businesses got something like, I don't know the correct term, it's like 2 gigawatts of generators. Whites put up like 4 gigawatts of solar panels. So that it was whites who reduced the load on the electric grid.
What you said there reminds me of an African dictator in Equatorial Guinea where they needed lubricant for a power station. And he said, you don't need lubricant. My magical voodoo powers will help you. And then the power station blew up.
Yes. So what I'm telling you is that this country, as we sit here, the blacks and everything related to blacks is collapsing more and more, and it's so bad that nobody can fix it. But meanwhile, there's a section of the whites that has survived, and we managed to live, we managed to work. Some are even armed quite well. And I want to tell you that when it comes to, if it comes down to military power, we may have quietly accumulated enough military power that we could in the future actually fight them. We could fight probably, this is going to come out in the video, we could probably fight the whole army and the whole police force, because the police force here is big and the police force is armed here. I'm telling you that we could probably fight the whole freaking government, just normal white guys with normal civilian-type weapons. That is what I'm seeing coming out of this. So as much as everything collapses, there's a point where whites are always functional and hanging in there, and our ability to adapt in hardship is greater than theirs. And I saw this also earlier, and you can see it in other examples of earlier wars that we fought, that when things go wrong and society collapses, for you, Patrick, from Rhodesia, I must tell you, the ability of whites to adapt to all kinds of hardships is tremendous. And whites could fix all kinds of things and work with old things and carry on when blacks in neighboring states were collapsing because they couldn't work with new things that came from Europe. So, you know, you guys in America, you are very, very, even you in Britain, you are very, very far away from being in as bad shape as us. But there is no time ever that we as a race actually really collapse. I'm watching how the blacks are collapsing more and more. And, you know, even their attempts to destroy us with crime is not that successful. I used to be much more worried about crime 10, 20, and 30 years ago than I am now. Crime is still around, but we adapt. And another thing that helps us, that all of you must stick with, there are some people on the white right that are stupid and they want to go away from technology. Don't do that. Technology. Technology saves your life. In South Africa, I want to tell you, if it wasn't for phones, phone chats, and the internet, we would have been inundated with crime. By organizing, the way that we solved crime was we used phones as a way of warning our communities about crime. Now every single part of South Africa has got communities on the phones, and they check out crime stuff. So the other positive is that the one good thing, whether it's liberal or not, is that Western technology is always moving forward, always. And I'm watching how the blacks are falling behind and they're struggling more and more, whereas whites are always up to date and things like and are using things like the internet, etc. So my own experiences, and I'm a computer programmer, I keep telling people, don't turn away from technology. Technology will save us. So I want to do other videos. I want to get onto the specific topic of racial conflict, but with a strict military angle. And when I do that, I hope that you guys get it. I'll give it out to Georgi and everybody. But when I do, please don't miss it, because I want to discuss that. So you might think that we in South Africa are finished, and most people here are feeling despondent. But when I actually look and speak to people and I observe and everything, I'm telling you, whites have actually done freaking well.
I think we're finished in the UK, to be honest, more than anywhere.
You guys in the UK worry me a lot, because there's lots of stuff that you guys don't have that the rest of us have. In South Africa, we're a little bit more American in the sense that we are more like for guns and that kind of stuff. It bothers me that you guys in Britain don't have guns. But you know, ultimately,
I would personally, I think that it might have been a good idea if we kept the guns when we had more morals and things, and maybe criminals and things wouldn't have been to get away with what they get away with now. But if you brought guns back to the Britain now, it would be anarchy. You know, you'd have people shooting each other over stupid shit. People are, like I say, majority of people are into crime and on drugs. I mean, but I think that if the Brits had kept the guns, the country would not be able to decline of what it did, because it wouldn't have been allowed. Pakis wouldn't have gone around raping white children. Indians wouldn't have had, and none of these Asiatic people from the Middle East or India would have got away with the shit they got away with. But people are just so fucked now. You couldn't give them guns, to be truthful with you. You've got, Like I say, a lot of working class women now, they're pregnant on the 16 with some rigor, and then they're on the 21.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I mean, But, well, in America, it's quite good example for the opposite. I mean, the gun laws vary from state to state, from what I've known. But I don't think that these mass shootings that they're using for anti-gun propaganda, right? I don't think that they're so often in comparison for how many guns the Americans possess and what type of guns they possess.
Yes. I'm not against this, I believe.
I'm firmly in the American camp on the gun thing. Because we need guns in the hands of white men, period. Mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. I'm not against guns. What I'm saying is, to be honest with you, I think we in Britain should have guns because we've got loads of robberies, we've got loads of car theft, bike theft, stabbings for jewellery. I think if we had a gun, the whites could protect themselves. And I'm not being funny. Blacks have guns. The travellers have guns. They sell them.
The travellers. I like your term, the travellers.
But
there's a racial slur that people use called pikey, but I want to call them the travellers.
Just example, here, I believe, plus minus the law of possession is like the German law, and they added a little, I'm not even sure that this is part of the German law, but here specifically, you must have at least...
the Muslims have guns. They hide them in the mosque. There's been
No. Must have at least a basic of 90 IQ. 90 IQ is like nothing, right? For the normal people, it's 90 IQ to pass these tests for gun possessions. And of course, you must pass a behavioral test or whatever. And a lot of gypsies cannot pass the IQ test. Well, so you're selecting them on a racial basis without being openly racist.
You can get guns
racist.
In the UK.
Brilliant.
By the way.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, guys.
Okay, guys.
I have to go.
Same here.
Jan, I appreciate you giving me such a well thought out answer, but I do think this is a topic that should be touched on some more in the future. I don't know where, when, or with whom, but
it was a pleasure to meet you as well, vulgar German.
Yeah, the reason why I'm so interested in this stuff, and actually South Africa is very interesting to me, is because my ancestors, they weren't in a totally similar setting, but maybe you did that video a long time ago on the Amish and the Hutterites.
Yes,
my ancestors,
yes,
and some Amish too, and they lived in Russia and they were butchered by them. You know, they were pacifists and everything, very Christian, and it didn't end well for them. And there's a few that came here and now.
And against technology.
I don't want to brag, but North Dakota, where most of them settled, has the second highest IQ in the country.
Brilliant.
On average.
Brilliant.
103, I think, is the average there.
Can I just say something?
To get to the point, though, they were butchered, and I just see that if something is done properly in South Africa, the same fate can be avoided for them. So,
you know something? I want to tell you, it's simply a case that people have not been desperate enough to actually just get up and fight. But make no mistake, as things move forward, we're going to get our chance. And the whole thing is simply a case of people feeling scared enough and people being pushed hard enough. And that event that happened 2 years ago was fantastic. It was like a little rerun for a race war. And do you know that in all that violence that took place in those 8 days, almost 400 blacks got killed. And there were a couple of Indians dead and a couple of Indians dead as well, and not one single white was dead, even though tens of thousands of blacks rushed out to do things. The whites were very calm about the whole thing. Let me tell you guys, real conflict, real warfare, like we see in Ukraine and those places, if real warfare has to come to Africa, I've seen enough that I'm absolutely confident about what we can do. We've survived, we've managed to live long enough. The blacks were sure that they could destroy us by now. But you know how they were also beaten was in courts and through all kinds of other stuff. Even some of the silly liberal elite, and Jews actually managed to keep the blacks away from some of the stuff they wanted to do. So the blacks are the ones that are actually slowly failing completely, and the large majority of people are going to be okay. Plus, what we can do in South Africa, which I'm going to be doing, I need to do a special video on it. What we need really to get going is we need to get onto secession. Secession is a thing that we're sort of allowed to do. That in and of itself is a legal discussion. But the thing that I think is the big secret here is we here need to come up with plans for secession. And then when we secede, the blacks will hate it. The blacks will try then the blacks will get violent. And that is how we can trap these people into a thing. And if that doesn't do it, the other possibility is that the blacks themselves may become more and more violent as time goes by. But, you know, a thing that brings people together is hardship. This I saw the most in Rhodesia. And the Rhodesian spirit, and Patrick, this is a lesson for you. From British English people, I was in a society where 80% of the whites were English from Britain. And I must tell you that when you are under real attack, I'm talking real attack, where people are coming with guns to fucking kill you, that nothing clears your head like that.
Can I say something about guns in the UK, though? We have guns in the UK. You can get a gun legally, but the quality you need, it's got a lot of regulation. Like, you need to have very high standards to qualify for a gun. Like, and unfortunately, when Nord was on about what you would need to qualify for a gun, most Brits would not qualify. That would not meet them quotas, like you mentioned to Nord. But I agree, we need guns, but I would say in the UK we need to educate people more and de-negro size them and make them more functional and less into crime, and then give them the back of the guns, definitely.
What I want to tell you is have any of you, if any of you haven't seen my lecture, I did a lecture called 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa. If you haven't watched that, I urge you to watch it. Then you'll see how we struggled and the many successes we had. And I'm absolutely convinced that there are military strategies we can use that will allow us to win. It's not that difficult. The main thing to overcome is moral issues. But once you get over that hump, I want to tell you, whites will be able to clobber everyone. And what I like to tell whites, what I like to remind whites in America and Canada, even when I've met them face to face, is I keep telling them this, keep remembering, even when you are less than 50% of the population, you're still going to be able to clean their clocks. And Americans, I must tell you, white Americans could be down to 20% of the population, and you could still take all of America back. You could flatten everybody. And the same is true for you guys in Britain, man. I mean, you're 60 million people, but if what is 10%? Let's say 10 million of you were hardcore and everything has gone to hell and there's lawlessness and the country is collapsing, you could still get your country back. What I've seen for us that makes me feel very happy is that we in South Africa are becoming a failed state. And as things collapse, an important part of collapse, and there are many failed states in Africa, a beautiful thing about a failed state is that the government itself loses control of everything, including the army and the police, which means that when the state fails, the state itself doesn't have the means to come and kill you. So it just means that the society is going to turn into a free-for-all. But a free-for-all is fine as long as we got guns. And then we can become the state. So
can't just say, though, I'm not against
that's where
guns.
We're heading to.
All right. Well, Nord, thanks for having me on. Alex,
thank you.
Patrick, Jan, it's a good meeting.
Yeah,
I
nice
hope
meeting,
that,
yeah.
Nice meeting yeah. you guys, meeting, yeah. and it would be lovely to be in touch with you or to you're
just
welcome
be,
to leave your email address or let me have some way of contacting you.
Just an idea before ending the conversation. Maybe we must make an analysis of some audiobooks, and maybe we can split the work in two, let's say. I believe that you can find the White Library by Alen Semyonov in Telegram, and you can download, let's say, Kalergi. Kalergi is the practical idealism is around 4 hours, like audiobook. And if you insist, I think that he has also the PDF file. So it's a good idea to start of analyzing and deconstructing the ideological enemy, so to say. Because basically the narrative is very shallow. That the European Union is still following the narratives of Kalergi and the clique around Kalergi, because Kalergi was not individual around him. There were many other interesting types. Yeah. Just the idea. And this is for Jan, for Volga Jäger. It's I'll be interested to hear your opinions on some of these books, let's say.
Okay, right. let me tell you what I do, Georgi. I love PDFs. If you can get the PDF to me, I'll go through it. I go through tons of PDFs all the time, because I'm busy creating audiobooks as well. So yeah, and nice to meet you guys. Okay,
it's a pleasure meeting you all as well, and talking with you.
And Patrick, it's been really good to meet someone from Britain. It's really awesome. And I wish we could find out more, but I will try to be in touch with you guys either through Georgi or leave me your email address. And then we can always talk. So thank you very much for everything, guys. And it's really been a pleasure to talk to all of you. And Georgi, this was a very awesomely organized chat. Maybe we should have one in a month or 6 weeks time or so.
I think that the next will be with Rudolf about the economical situation in Europe, but this will be a different I start to you
it
know
was a pleasure meeting you all as well and speaking to you, but like I say, I'm not totally against guns, but what I'm saying is where white Brits are, maybe it'd be best to help them and educate them and improve them and then give them guns. Because, like I say, I do believe that we should have the right to bear arms, but do I believe we should give guns when the whole country is like, I don't know, Compton in LA or London, the whole country is drug dealers and...
I don't think that the guns alone will make you free. I mean, look at Americans. They have all kinds of rights and guns and whatever. Still, they're not moving. But the guns are one of the
guns,
things.
Yeah. Guns are the last resort. So when you lose everything, the reason I mentioned guns is for when you lose everything, when voting doesn't work and all that stuff and Absolutely. Everything is lost, that's when guns come into their own. And that's when race war can be the final.
I do believe it was a mistake giving them up, because I believe that led to the decline.
I'm going to butcher a quote here, but I think this is from our universal uncle. I could be wrong. But he said something to the effect of, I would rather have a man with a club fighting for me than a coward with 10 guns.
Nice. Yeah, motivation. That's about motivation. Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much for everything. Hey, okay.
Thank you. Yeah, bye bye.
Thank you also. Like I said, it was a pleasure.
And so, for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. Thank the whites! Thank